what we've been just stated as to how we proceed and how we accommodate in our program. In terms of other members of the committee, we have apologies from Mr. Fiedler. I think he's with his intelligence committee somewhere. Mr. Diale, similarly, I think is another committee. Mr. Novo. And then we are expecting Mr. Nkwabava, Mr. Ndaka, and Mr. Ngwenya to join us. We also have apologies from Mr. Ndovu, BB, and Mr. Panamer, the JH, from the IFG. So hopefully at 9 o'clock those members would have arrived. However, if they haven't arrived, we're going to continue because this is a workshop and there's no decisions to be taken. Allow for discussions at the end of each program as opposed to doing it at the end. We will allow for discussion after each program. After lunch, we will then deal with legislative matters and all other matters that might not be program specific, transversal issues. And at the end of the day, hopefully we'll be in a position to do justice to the constitutional requirements that Parliament must ensure that the executive is accountable, and Section 55B also enjoins Parliament to maintain oversight. Now, we don't believe that we can maintain effective oversight unless we understand exactly what is it that you are planning to do. And with that knowledge, we are then going to be able to become an activist parliament. In other words, we're not going to be reactive. Certainly, this committee will, where possible, be proactively engaging this department, as opposed to waiting for the deed to be committed before we say, explain why or account. We'll be very much an activist parliament and try and assist and be part to taking this department to where it's going to tell us it wants to go to, and also informed by the white paper and the exercise. So we are going to be very much proactive in our oversight and holding you accountable as enjoined by the Constitution. We, as I indicated earlier on, have one objective as the committee. Our objective is to, in this workshop at least, understand where you see yourself taking the department. We've identified what we think were the challenges. At our very first meeting, we've identified at least 5 or 6 areas that we're going to focus on. And when we have an understanding of where you want to take the department to and time frames, we will then be able to either influence you to change direction because we think priorities are different, or then be able to adapt our own or adopt our own plan so that it's aligned to your plan. But we've identified areas that we think that we're going to focus on certainly this year. Arising from the legacy report, I think it's important that we indicate this. Arising from the legacy report that we received from the previous committee, there were quite a few outstanding matters there, and issues and challenges that we are all aware of as this department faces. highlighted in the budget inputs by all members of the committee, including the minister and Auditor General's reports. So it's everything that we know about this department that we're going to use in terms of oversight and accountability. Everything that we know, including interacting with stakeholders, which we've begun before the budget process. So it's really going to be a microscopic view of the department beginning today into certainly the next 5 years of this parliament. I think members of parliament are known to the department. We've introduced ourselves every time we're here, but I'm going to ask the department to introduce themselves and their area of focus, because we're expecting that when we get to program 3, that the DDG in charge of corrections will lead us on that one, for instance, and program 4. So if you can introduce yourself and say, this is who I am, and this is my area of responsibility, so that at least from outside we know which is your area of responsibility, and then expect you together with the leadership to really take the lead in this regard. Hopefully after you've introduced yourself, the minister would have arrived. We'll then afford the minister a few minutes to engage with us, and if needs be, we will also respond to whatever she has to bring in terms of our own needs. So can we start here, sir, and introduce yourself and tell us where your area of responsibility.
Thanks so much, sir. My name is Lebogang Mpeki. I'm responsible for 4 of the programs that we're having in the program today, and that will deal with security, corrections, social integration, and facilities. There is a slight omission share that I also must highlight, which is a bit unfortunate. The 5th area that we have pulled aside deals with awaiting trial detainees exclusively, which will not necessarily be the same as correction. And it might be an area where perhaps at some point we can afford me 5 minutes or so just to talk to it in broad strokes, so that if there is any level of interest in that area, that too can be accommodated in your areas of focus. Thanks so much.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. My name is Jabu Sishuba, and I am the head in the Deputy Minister's Office. Thank you. Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Sebastian Whitley. I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner, Development and Care, and responsible for 2 of the budget programs, namely number 4, Program 4, which is Care, and Program 5, which is Development.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Alfred Zetsani. I'm the Chief Deputy Commissioner responsible for Human Resources Corporate Services under Program Administration. Thanks.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Manelisi Walela. I'm here as Acting Chief Deputy Commissioner for Central Services. It's one of the sub-programs under Program 1 Administration.
Good morning, Chairperson and Members. My name is P. Gombambo. I'm the Deputy Commissioner responsible for Executive Management. I'm the Head of Office in the Commissioner's Office, responsible for coordination within the department and the regions of correctional services. Thank you very much.
Jefferson resigned correctional services. I'm here just to learn, to learn from all of you, but also interested in picking up and soliciting the thinking of the whole committee about the expectations from the department. In introducing myself, I could as well indicate that there are specific areas that are designated to me, which I'll be overseeing. The first one is the management of development and care, including programs of rehabilitation and social reintegration. The second one is the old cabinet project, establishment of the awaiting trial detainees, ATD branch within the department. The third one is the interface with the office of the inspecting judge, and of course the usual deputizing the minister in all other matters relating to her office, except today. Today I didn't get the mandate. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to interrupt proceedings when the minister comes, but we definitely cannot wait any longer for the minister. We just can't. And I do know that, unless you tell me otherwise, you're still requesting that program one be delayed a little bit, or can we? That's just the finance part of it. Okay, in program one, there are three divisions. There's HR, central services, and finance. And I'm informed that we can continue with the two, except finance, until we have the relevant individuals here. So could we then kick off with the whichever one, HR or central services, I'm not sure. And then we'll move to finance, hopefully the finance person or person responsible for finance would be here by then, but it is now 9 o'clock, 9:15. We'll see how we go, but we have to catch about 45 minutes of our time. So let's kick off, sir.
Thank you, sir. There is a presentation, unfortunately, that we were late to send around. It's being printed. Speaks to the three programs, just an overview of all the sub-programs within that program. So, I think the documents will be circulated. It's just a summary of all the programs within this program of administration. I wished to just start there as opening before I get to the details of this. As soon as it shows on the screen, I'll just touch on those and then zoom on to the one that the chairperson is clearly identified. And then what we have provided is just the details around the HR issues within the department. These are in line with the strategic objectives, measurable objectives that are in the strategy with us moving forward from here. And that's the document that has been circulated currently. Okay. Well, within the strategic plan of the department, whilst the other presentation is still trying to run, the major objective that we are supposed to be delivering on as corporate services is the improvement of human resource capacity and management to enable the department to fulfill its mandate. And the strategy that would, I'll be speaking to directly is the compliance with policies, standards, programs, and applicable legislation. From HR side, HR perspective on that matter, the main aspect was to get our policies finalized. Just to give a perspective and a background, not that there are no policies that are applicable, but there was a review following the white paper on corrections. There was a review of the policies. Currently, we are applying those policies that exist in the department, and whilst we working on those policies, we then reviewed to close the gaps that exist. And the policies were submitted. We had some administrative challenges that the policies up to this time have not been finally approved. We reworking whatever of those policies in terms of latest challenges that the department is facing to make sure that we close the gaps. It's a list of policies ranging from our recruitment, because we are re-looking at the whole stream from recruitment, how do we improve our recruitment processes, issues of staff benefits, and also what we were trying to do in this is to rationalize the policies, because what the policies that were governing, we were working on orders, so everything was based on the old orders during the past era. So we were trying to rationalize and come up with proper policies. So that process is running, it is in progress. It's a process that we envisage will be completed by the end of this financial year. And the second objective, the second strategy under the same objective, it was the compliance, ensuring compliance with these policies. We have various aspects in the department with central services we'll be speaking to that ensure compliance on policies, because we've got the inspector rates, we've got our investigative capacity, all HR does in support of that. We do monitoring and evaluation, but in terms of the compliance and identification of gaps, we use inspectorate. We also use our internal audit, as well as our investigative, the DIU, where people deliberately and because of corrupt activities would violate policies. So that is the area in that regard. And then we have a policy that we specifically looked at around human resources, mainly for alignment with the integrated human resource development and management strategy of the public service. So we are in that process of aligning. We have established a task team by now, and that task team is running. Then the other strategy, which is A2.2 in terms of the strategic plan, which is to coordinate and monitor the improvement, the provision, maintenance of human resources. There are quite a number of aspects that we're looking at in that regard. Thank you. the documents have been actually made that we proceed to say. The corporate services presentation is circulated, neither proceed or not. So I was on page 2, Chairperson, of that document, talking to the HRC trust team that we have established to align the HRC policy and in line with what DPSA and the public service in general have issued as guidelines. And again, on the strategy, the strategic plan, we've got strategy 2.2, which is to coordinate and monitor improvement of provision, maintenance, and the management of human resources. What we have set as a target is to look at managing the number of days lost due to leave, excluding vacation leave, against the total number of annual working days that we monitored. We are trying to assess and also have a baseline of seeing how many days we actually lose. We have had a policy that extended special leave, which was beyond what the public service provided. We have negotiated this. We went to the bargaining council. We have an agreement looking at the reduction of those number of days of leave. Just on the bottom of that slide, we're just indicating what the baseline is right now in terms of the work that is in progress. Annual leave 3.27, leave without pay, sick leave, the TIL, and family responsibility leave. So we're trying to unpack the number of days that we are giving off to officials, so that we could be in a position to monitor. It's termination on ill health. I'm sorry, termination on ill health. Sorry. And then that is the temporary ill health leave that we give to people. Incapacity leave, temporary incapacity leave. Personal reported statistics on leave days taken, excluding vacation leave, as 35209.41. And then the cost for all leave categories, excluding vacation leave, it's 31 million. So this is what we are trying to manage, Chairperson, that we have more people at work than being on leave. This requires not only us, but it requires people who are also managers within the region. And then on slide 3, it's about reducing the average vacancy rate. To currently we are at 11% Chairperson, and our target over the period of 5 years is that we should be at a rate of 5% over the next 5 years. So with the challenges that we are facing in terms of funding, there are some of the vacancies that we use to deal with those challenges. But in terms of actions and activities of what we wanted to achieve is to develop a recruitment plan which is in place, monitor the recruitment, and also recruit 1,768 entry level. Together with other levels, the target that the minister had set for this year is 2,200 vacancies that would need to fill for this financial year. Then moving on to the next one, where we want the target to reduce the turnaround time for filling of vacancies. We have a challenge in this area, Chairperson and honorable members, and would want to reduce that to 120 days. Then what we are busy with is reviewing the recruitment and selection processes to refine our recruitment turnaround time monitoring tool, which is under development, and report quarterly and overall rate to see whether we're making any progress in this regard. In terms of the on page four, with regards to the other target, we're looking at maintaining vacancy rate for professional and scarce skills to be below 50%. It's a challenge that we are facing not only in the DCS but also in the public service in general, that we are able to recruit professionals like social workers, nurses. When we've recruited them, the challenge is how we retain them, depending on the, based on the conditions of service. The OSDs are standardizing the salaries currently of nurses, social workers, which we hope that it would assist the department to be able to retain these professionals that we so need in the department. However, others are still outstanding, like psychologists. The OSD for psychologists is still outstanding. We hope that would also standardize. What the resolution, in particular of the nurses and the social workers, says around issues of the conditions of service for those professions that operate in correctional services is the payment of danger allowances as well, that they would be eligible to danger allowance. So we're hoping that that would assist us. But in the main, what we're working on is to utilize our headhunting strategy, which is within our attraction and retention strategy, which we put together as a department, that we also would go out and market the department in universities and colleges where the training is taking place to ensure that we'll be in a position to attract enough of these people. However, in other areas like pharmacy, there are processes to outsource, to looking at outsourcing model. I think Ms. Moodley would report on this matter when she speaks about the feasibility studies that has already been done to make sure that we are in a position to deliver that service without relying to just recruiting officials into the department as an alternative to service delivery. I won't go into the much of the detail that is provided in the presentation. It's just a report of all the activities and the actions that the department has embarked upon just to make sure that we are able to reduce the number in terms of recruitment of these professionals, as it can be indicated in under the first part of the achievement, the challenges that we face and the vacancy levels that we have. On page 5, Chairperson, the turnaround time for processing of terminations to be reduced to 180 days. The standard is that we need to finalize terminations for retirement within 30 days. For other, terminations like people being dismissed, resignations, and so on, the turnaround time needs to be 30 days to finalize that. However, we do face challenges in many instances that people who terminate their services through resignations, they would refuse to sign this or that other form that is required because they terminate or dismissed because the relationship has broken down and certain processes cannot be completed without them signing. However, we're working very hard from our side as a department to finalize that process, to make sure that we improve the termination identify problem areas in the service termination process, establish and monitor the function of service termination forums, and develop a service termination document tracking system. What another innovation we with GEPF, we have allowed and agreed with GEPF, they have established their office at our head office in Pretoria to make sure that we facilitate the termination process, particularly the payment of pensions that are due to people exiting the system. We're looking at the strategy also, 2.3, improvement of and management of service termination. We have developed an exit management strategy, and that program is being implemented, where we've got a form that is completed by a person who leaves the department, also citing the reasons why they are leaving the department. We do provide a quarterly report to the commissioner in terms of what the trends are, why people exit the organization, mainly in trying to see whether we could close gaps where we can to enable our people to remain in the service and improve where we could improve. On page 6, the strategy 2.4 to improve performance and career management systems, we were in the process of developing a career pathing model. In fact, the department had developed some model which we shared with GPSA, and before the negotiations of 2007, in which case GPSA had advised that we would be actually coming up with the OSDs, which would be dealing with the issues of career pathing and career advancement of officials. So then since the signing of Resolution 1 of 2007, we've been working on a career pathing model as part of the negotiations, salary negotiations, and that process has been completed, and the resolution is signed, and I think according to the program of the portfolio committee, there's a time that we'll be expected to come and give a full briefing to the portfolio committee around the OSD itself and how it's going to be implemented. And for the other professions, of course, there are OSDs that are being developed for the different professions. And the public service has developed and designed and signed a resolution for career pathing of officials who don't fall within the specific professions like correctional service profession and the other related professions, for people who would be working in offices. So their career path is also determined through that process. Under 2.4, improving performance and career, the key issue was to revise organizational structure and post-establishment of the department, and the continued implementation of the OSD structure that has been designed. The structure is finalized. The revised structure has been finalized in December last year with the former minister, and we had had a presentation also to the minister currently. What the intention was of that structure was not to reorganize in the sense of restructuring the department. It was intended to bring alignment on certain services that were not properly aligned, and also looking at what the white paper required from the department and checking whether those services were properly aligned. So that process has been completed. The minister has had sight of the document, and she has made input. It has been referred back for reworking, and we hope that it will be finalized by the end of the financial year. We're also going to be finalizing the establishment that accompanies that, because that is going to determine the number of staff that we also are going to need to make sure that there is effective service delivery. And under the target performance management system on page 7,
that is aligned to the requirements of the OSD. We have a performance management system which we put together, and we also dealt with labor, that is unions, on it, and it's being implemented right now. But because of the OSD, that also indicates different career incidents within the advancement and the career party of correctional officials, would have a process of revisiting the PMDS. But at the current moment, it's a program that is running within the department as is. And mainly because the OSD also dictates a different way of recognizing pay progressions and grade progressions and so on, so that will have an impact on our performance management system, or our PMDS. On page 8, on the target that deals with the valid, reliable, and accurate human resource data that needs to be provided, we can indicate, Chairperson, that with the PESTAL, we have security that is based on, we've improved our security, where people who access PESTAL use a biometric system. And we are looking at a system that would bring in further security features into that. There is a system that we're looking at that would support the PESTAL, particularly in terms of calculations of payment of overtime, and also the calculation of allowances that are required, which is an HR-focused system that we're working on. And that system is a system that will be augmenting PESTAL for us to also improve on our data integrity. Because what we have realized just as the last input there is that instead of people, now that we have closed the door on PESTAL through the biometric system on the PESTAL security issues, now you get errors, human errors, people using human errors in terms of deliberate errors that they make on the system. And that system would be able to assist us to close that gap as well. On page 9, yes.
Before you move on page 8, what is a TSA appointment versus an NOA?
A TSA appointment is the Correctional Services Act appointees. And then we have, it's supposed to be a PSA, the other one. Because the other PSA is the public service appointment. These are the people that now, who are in administration positions, as I indicated, that are going to be appointed in terms of the Public Service Act. Let me just get to that, Chairperson. No, that's supposed to be an error. It's supposed to be PSA. I'm sorry. No, we've got only categories. I think there should be the two categories we have is people appointed under the Public Service A and NDCS Act. Those are the only two. No, what it means, the number of people that we have on our system appointed under the Public Service Act, because we have Correctional Services Act appointees, which are the people that are dealing directly with offenders that would be classified as correctional officials. Then we'd have those that would be appointed as Public Service Act appointees. All the clerks in the offices who are now not going to be appointed as Correctional Services Act appointees.
because that has implications, cost implications, and the functioning is based purely at the national office and not in centers. National office and regional offices. On page 9, A26 as a strategy, provide human resource development programs and services based on organizational priorities and strategies. The target we have there is that 2.5% of the 1,150 of the finance post established, appointed into the graduate internship program, and 2,000 students offered experiential training. This is in support of the call of cabinet that we need to have the graduates undergoing an internship program within the department. In the previous years, we've been doing that. And then this current financial year, because of shortages of funds, we are partnering with SACITA, and we'll be taking not more than 200 students in this financial year. In the past financial years, we had taken about 1,500 per annum of those interns. That refers to that. And 100 interns, 40 of them would be at head office, appointed under the public service internship program. Now, this one refers to that. The top one is those that who want to complete their qualifications, who universities say you must go and do this program in IT in a company, and more giving them experiential training. We're targeting 200, and the 100 that we are targeting is the internship, the graduate internship program. Because in terms of what cabinet has mandated is that we need to use the funding of that we have of vacant positions that are not being filled in a particular period. You could fund it from there in the department, because there's no special allocation that comes to us in that regard to deal with the internship programs. On page 10, Jefferson, the strategy 82.6 provides human resource development still. 200 student interns enrolled. No, that's the one that we've dealt with. We trained 50 students in this past three months. But it needs to be mentioned that significant achievements have been prevented due to lack of funding, as I said, in the current financial year. And the other target under 2.6 is the implementation of learnership on the basic corrections. We had set a target of 3,000, and for the public admin is intended for those people who will be appointed under the Public Service Act. And auxiliary social workers, 51 are targeted. We have them already in the system working with SACITA, and we have created positions to augment the capacity that we need under the professionals of through the auxiliary social workers. And we've got 51 in the system already. And then we're also going to be providing the massified training program that is required by the public service. We have done some work up to this point, as noted in the charts. And then there's... in terms of the Skills Development Act, workplace skills planning, the process is being undertaken. We needed to conduct a skills audit for us to be able to put together our workplace skills plan. So a task team has been appointed to do this, and we've also now established a committee composing of the DCs and DRCs from the various regions. I'll accelerate forward, Chairperson, to save time and move to 2.7 on page 14, building the HR capacity sports, wellness in SADC and African countries in the context of corrections. Our target there was to build HR capacity, sports and wellness in SADC, African countries, in the context of the field, in our field of corrections. And we have a bilateral that was signed by the previous minister, and I think there are processes that are also proceeding in this financial year. A workshop was held with the countries of SADC in Swaziland, where Swaziland, Zambia, Southern Sudan, and Lesotho participated, and our principals were also there, the minister had attended, where the need is to review some of the bilaterals that we have with those countries. And then strategy 2.8, the target is integrated employee wellness, health and wellness program designed and implemented. Our activities as listed them is to deal with, to facilitate the implementation of safety, health and environmental health programs, conducting training on correct reporting of the incident of claims of injury on duty, that the COIT, and then monitor compliance with our EAP service delivery, which is a major challenge for us in terms of retention. Monitor the implementation of HIV/AIDS programs, the improvements and participation levels in sports and recreation for us to maintain a healthy workforce, and host and coordinate national executive committees and championships for the department, and participation in international tournaments like the World Police and Fire Games, and identification of health and wellness programs available within local government structures, and signing of MOUs with six national federations for sports education. This is one area where we encouraging mass participation as well, Chairperson. And then the list there, I think, is just the what has been done so far. So I'll just move on to the next strategy, which is strategy number 16. The functioning of labor relations forums that we need to evaluate in order to improve on our employee relations processes in the department. We have a ministerial labor forum established. We also have labor forums at in centers, head office, and at the regional office. And then some regions are not functioning well. My major focus as head office is to monitor and make sure that there's labor peace in the region through the implementation and the functioning of these structures across the board. Moving to strategy 2.9, and the target being relationship building by objectives on page 17. This came as a result, Chairperson, of the differences that existed between labor and the management of the department in the past. So it's an ongoing process where we, the directorate at the national office, as national office, we are monitoring the functioning of the labor, of the forum in the regions. There's a national one, and there's also a regional one. The next one is just mainly to ensure that we monitor what is happening. That is 2.9, the target being employee relations data integrity. We just having a challenge at this point in time that we're doing everything manually, but be that as it may, we do get reports from regions in terms of disciplinary cases, suspensions that are there in the regions, and the management thereof. And we put quarterly reports to the accounting officer and be able to monitor with the regional commissioners how they are proceeding and succeeding in managing disciplinary cases in the various regions. And then on page 18, strategy 210, manage workforce representation in line with employment equity target. For this year, we are targeting to, in line with the presidency and the DPSA job access strategy, to make sure that we align our processes with that. That's the first one we are going to be dealing with. The second target, we are going to be looking at employment equity plan, which is expiring this year, but we've got a new plan that we put on the table, and we've got some latest statistics in terms of what the equity plan looks like currently. Thanks, Jefferson. See the minister entering. And then on the issues of youth development framework strategy, which has been developed, it just needs to be refined to relook at the targets and the alignment with the newly formed agency on youth issues. But there is work in progress in that regard. And then we also have a gender desk, implementation of a gender equality strategy framework, and the work that is proceeding in that regard, looking at how we deal with transformation of issues to deal with non-sexism, establish a policy environment, meet our employment equity targets as it relates to women in the department, provide adequate resources and an enabling environment, and also issues of gender mainstreaming. On page 20, we're looking at the strategy that deals with participate in national government and administration cluster. It's more of the government program of action activities that we engage in. Identification of local GNA substructures, identification and formalization of representatives for different meetings, monitor and report on involvement, send representatives to JCPS, HR task teams meetings. So we are participating from HR side in those task teams as well, Chairperson. On page 21, the strategy that deals with the centralized database and information system for monitoring of performance information on relevant outputs and outcome indicators. We were in the process, together with IT, to have an automated system to deal with our equity target. Training is taking place, terminations, exit management strategy, as well as the employee health and wellness, and providing a report from time to time. Due to financial and capacity challenges, the branch has indicated inability to achieve these targets during this financial year. However, IT is looking into this as we are busy with reprioritization of funds in this regard. And then the next one is the A213 post-establishment aligned with approved organizational structure. I've referred to it above. There's progress in that, where we want to have a properly done post-establishment, also following the approval of the structure. Finally, then we know exactly the number of people that we need and the capacity we need as a department. The issue of the awaiting trial detainees branch is a matter that has been referred now to a task team that has been established by the minister to be able to deal with this. Reporting on this matter will be coming through that committee henceforth. On page 23, the structure and post-establishment amended to provide for probation and assistant probation officer. The process is running. Our HR planning unit has been in consultation with the various departments where you get probation officers, like social development. We're looking at putting a proposal through around this matter so that we can get approval. These are targets of the JCPF, and these are the cross-cutting methods. The next one is a target of 20% of job descriptions revised. As we align within the white paper, also now currently with the implementation of the OSD, our unit is going back to revisit all the job descriptions to make sure that people function within the relevant job descriptions by the time we have finalized the structure. And then on page 24, it's with regards to job evaluation, which is a situation that may change with the implementation of the OSDs. But what DPSA does, it identifies those mandatory positions that should and must be evaluated to make sure that there's equal pay for the equal weight of work that people are doing. So we've done some work there, as the targets indicate, that has been set and where we've been right now. And the latest in our interaction with DPSA is that this may not be an area of focus by departments in future in with regards to the OSD, implementation of the OSDs. Chairperson, thank you very much. That is the presentation on HR. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions on HR that members want to ask? Mr. Ngwenya, if you guys came to the side, it's going to make my job much easier. If members can sit on that side, it's going to make my job much easier. Mr. Sal, you're welcome, Minister. Do you want to?
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. I'd really like to focus on three areas. The first is, in the report, there's mention made at various points about possible shortages in critical posts and other posts for the Kimberley Correctional Centre. Can we have some sort of report that when the Kimberley Correctional Centre opens, it will be able to open because the posts will be identified, financed, and filled? That's the first question. The second one relates to vacancy rates. And I understood you to say vacancy rates, yeah. I understood you to say that the target was to reduce vacancy rates to 5%. The printed version says 10%. You will recollect that during the, if you refer to the legacy report, the figure of 5% is mentioned also there as a target. Now, I'd just like to know what the target is that we're working towards and whether there is progress towards making that a reality. The last question relates to suspension. I think if I understood you when you were presenting on page 17, although I must say there's a lot of verbiage here, there's a lot of, you know, jargon that gets used, and it's very difficult to unpack that jargon to find out exactly what we're talking about. I understood that your idea was to improve the time under which people are suspended, so as to reduce that to a minimum. But there's a very worrying thing on page 17. It says submission of data by regions to the head office runs very late. And together with capacity problems both at head office and the region, this process poses serious challenges to service delivery. I want to know, what are those challenges and what are the implications for improving the time under which people are suspended? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question will focus more around the absenteeism rate. I mean, Mr. Chair, if you just look at this and you take the line, the continuum, and extend it further, it's got a lot to do with wellness, with morale, I think. I mean, this is the kind of inferences one can draw from this kind of statistics. And then I can go specifically to the determination of ill health, where that figure stands at 8.20. I mean, it's in relation to all the other figures, it's glaringly high, and it says something about the wellness at our correctional services level. And then later I see you going to Africa, you know, and you have all these wellness programs, you know, and business in Africa, which are not again, but I think doesn't sanity begins at home. I'm just asking some more clarity around that. It is incredibly excessive to spend 31.6 million rand on, and that's excluding vocational leave, on all other types of leave. Now surely there must be some kind of, we're talking about saving costs, surely there's a very glaring cost-saving thing, and I hear your point that you are looking at targets and reducing that. But I would like to hear more kind of concrete measures and deadlines in terms of curbing and stopping that. I also would like to know your COIDA, and I see you refer to COID, but I think you mean COIDA. The whole reporting would be interesting just to see how many people get injured at on duty or, you know, while they're busy in correctional centers. If you have any figures around that, otherwise you can only get it later. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chairperson. And also thank you for the presentation from the department. Chairperson, I want to first, I would like to learn more about the monitoring. If the presenter can explain more about it, I want to understand about this monitoring, the labor relationship forum monitoring. Because it says that some of the regions are not performing very well, then, but there's no answer to say after the funding, what are they doing about those regions that are not functioning well. Another thing I want you to learn more about, Chairperson, is this DCS. The OSD, I want to know more about it, Chairperson, that as it has been implemented on the 1st of July, is it in our department functioning very well, and is it applying nationally? Then there's this 7 days establishment again, Chairperson, which I believe that it must be national. So I want to know that is it still in one province in Gauteng, or is it has been implemented to all the provinces? Thank you.
The member from Alta. Okay, I'm going to ask a question or two. But I think because this is a workshop and not an inquiry, I think members should, rather than just ask questions and offer solutions, and let's engage the department around those type of matters. Clearly where we need to ask questions, we can ask questions, but I think more we should be saying we agree, we disagree, we think we must change it, and let's debate. Because we certainly not going to accept everything that comes from the department. Just two things from my side. I want to follow up on what Mr. Self asked early on around the vacancy rate. When I look at the budget for administration last year, well, let's start by saying we the Auditor General's report or your annual report shows 11% vacancy rate. But when we look at the funds spent, There's no savings on that vacancy rate. What is happening? Why do you have 11% vacancy rate and yet you spend all the funds? And similarly, it's going to apply this year. We can't have a situation where we approve a budget for warm bodies. You have a target of 5% vacancy. Can you explain to us? And we understand the scarce skills, doctors, lawyers, and so on. But on the other people, why is there a difficulty of filling the vacancies? For us, it's not acceptable, quite honestly. Vacancies has been a problem, and we can tell you that you'll find some of these vacancies are in finance and in administration. Those are not scarce skills. So if you say to me that psychiatrists and those people are leaving, we'll accept. But if a bookkeeper vacancy is there, we're not going to accept it. And if you can't fill it, then you must tell us that you're going to take that money and divert it somewhere else. But you can't spend the money and not fill it. So that's the one that I wanted to touch on. Then the second one, I'm looking at the annual report for 2007-2008. And in that annual report, we have comparison of significant and prioritized risks between 2007-2008, 2008-2009. So it was that year and the year before. And the things that you're telling me now in 2009-2010 are things that were in that report. So I think my difficulty is that I'm not seeing progress. Let me give you an example. Inadequate or unacceptable turnaround time from advert to appointment. And this is 2007-2008 matters. Inadequate resourcing in relation to scarce skills. Lack of comprehensive and accurate data. So, a few of the things that you've raised now as your targets for this year have been targets since 2010. Can somebody explain to us when are we going to see progress in this? Because we're now dealing with the strat plan for the next 5 years, but things in the previous 5 years are still matters that are outstanding. We can't continue doing this. We can't. So if you guys can just explain to us, how do you see this thing going forward? Because we're going to have to develop a mechanism of oversight. We're going to have to develop a mechanism of oversight and deal with that matter. So if you can deal with those matters, we will then also, and let me indicate that we spent an hour just on HR. We have before the minister will be allowed to make an input. Minister, we've started with administration. We will allow you to do your input. But we've got central and finance. Those can't take another hour each when we get this. Those can just speed it up. But if you could respond to these questions on HR, we will then take central services. And is finance available? Well, your finance people are out. Not yet. Okay, let us deal with the HR questions if there are any responses to.
Thank you very much, Chair. No, I think we welcome the approach, Chair, that it's a workshop where we are going to be getting input on how the department could improve in other areas where there is no significant improvement. And let me start with the issue of Kimberley. Yes, no, I can confirm now that the issue of Kimberley has been taken care of. The officials at entry level have been appointed, and the structure at other levels, we're waiting for a job evaluation process that has been completed. So by the time Kimberley opens, we would be having staff that would be functioning in Kimberley. That we can confirm.
Can you offer to assist also in responding to the issue around vacancy, the vacancy rate? Indeed, the targeted vacancy rate in terms of our threat plan in the next 5 years is that we should come to 5% vacancy rate. And we have had complications with the signing of Resolution 1 of 2007, when the department had put strategies to really deal with the fast-tracking of appointments to make sure that we bring down the vacancy rate. Among that was the delegations that were centralized at the national office being given to regional commissioners and lower level, that the bureaucracy is minimized of submitting to head office up to deputy director level. That's where process was delegated to regional commissioners, where they have their own components that could do the cross-listing, the shortlisting, and fast-tracking that process. But it shot up because in terms of Resolution 1 of 2007, we were then expected to pay overtime when Treasury had not made an allocation for that purpose. So in the wisdom, collective wisdom in the department, looking at how best we can deal with that, because delivery needs to be given to the offenders and so on, one of the strategies was to say, let's rather have a moratorium and not proceed with the filling of vacancies and hold back so that we can have some funds, extra access funds, that we could be able to deal with the issue of the payment of overtime that is paid for weekends. So that's why then again, when we were, in fact, we were targeting that in three years, we would be at 7%. And at that time, we're already reaching 9%, and we're hoping that we will be reaching 7% in the next 3 years, and in 5 years, with all strategies that we put in place, we'll really be at 5%, which is the acceptable rate of vacancy level. So I think that's where we had a complication. Mr. Moseki wants to add that.
Before Mr. Moseki adds, let's. I don't know if you have last year's annual report with you. Let me just relate some of the things, and I think this is for us very critical. We're talking, and we accept that the psychologists, nurses, pharmacists, we accept that we have difficulties there from a retention point of view. But you have got client information clerks, 20% vacancy rate. You have computer programmers, 70% vacancy rate. Finance and economic related, I would imagine, clerk, 33% vacancy rate. Financial and related professionals, 53% vacancy rate. General ledger administration and related professionals, 53% vacancy rate. Secretaries and other keyboard operating clerks, 20% vacancy. It's not acceptable that we can have such a high vacancy rate in issues where I'm almost sure that we'll be able to pick up a switchboard operator today if we had to pick up a switchboard operator today. And we have a department where if you phone correctional services now, you wouldn't get somebody answering the phone because we don't have a clerk, or we don't have somebody answering the phone. These are the things that are beginning to frustrate not us, but the community out there. And I'm talking about 2008 financial year, and that's why I'm saying to the department that we're going to have to come back and have answers for vacancy rates in areas that we can fill immediately. There can't be retention skills problems with the switchboard operators. There can't be retention skill problems with computer programmers. Those people are falling out of their trees all by themselves. And if there's a problem, then we'll get them in our constituencies. I'm sure I'd get computer programmers in my constituency.
I'm sure I'll get switchboard operators in my constituency. And if we're serious about oversight, I don't think that we're going to accept this in the report at the end of this financial year. Let's just agree, all of us, on that one. We're not going to accept it. That there are switchboard operators, that there are general administration clerks that aren't there. The other methods we can deal with. So we'll get to the retention strategy later, but can somebody explain to us on these basic employments, what has been the difficulty up to now? What has been the difficulty, and how do we see ourselves filling the ones that I've just spoken to? And they are listed on page 152 of the annual report of 2008.
No, thanks, Chair. The one particular reason I thought I should attempt to answer your question is because you are so right. And there are two elements you make. One is the vacancy in respect of posts where ordinarily you should be able to get people without any serious difficulty. That's one area thing that we mentioned. And the second is that in spite of the vacancies, what you do not see in our annual report are savings. And those are the two specific issues that I think I want to attend to. But also to deal with the last issue that you're making mention of, that at the end of this year, you may not necessarily have to accept this report. But I just want to paint for you the severity of our problem. One is that if you look into 2007-8 annual report, you most probably will come to a realization that we're at 9% vacancy rate. And so we're closing up. We're closing up. Until 2008-9, when we had to apply the decisions entered into by Resolution 1 of 2007, the consequences of that meant that we needed an extra amount of money in the range of R500 million in our personal budget, where we had to pay overtime, which we tried to stop. I'm saying the consequence of Resolution 7 required in excess of R500 million from our personal budget. So the decision we took was, we're not filling up any post any further than now because we needed to recoup and generate those savings. And that is why you can't see savings from our budget. And the point I'm trying to paint to you is that we're at 9% and we're going forward until that decision was arrested, which generally meant that we could not continue filling posts. We had to save from our personal budget enough money to be able to pay an overtime that we tried to stop. And so we are in this financial year, and we are implementing the 2007 decisions. The implications of that for us this year is that we are running, there was no extra allocation made to the department to take care of the OSD implications. And so it meant that in the allocations we had for 2009-10, we have to generate funds now, again, from the allocations to pay off the implications of the OSD. If you were to hear what I'm saying, that there is every likelihood where we are now is to discontinue filling of posts again. And so the gap will most likely widen. It's as intense as that. And I really just wish you can hear me saying that we're at 9%, we're going forward. And in the course of last year and this year, the consequences of that decision are being brought to bear on us in a manner that we did not anticipate, and in a manner that the personnel budget is going to be the most affected. And it's an allocation we don't have. And it's an extra effort to try and generate these savings. And the only way you can generate these savings is if you do not continue with the filling of those posts. So I know that I'm thinking, and of course you will not see the savings again, but you will see the vacancies again, which, as I say, is a bit unfortunate. What the minister has tried to do since the inception of the work here is to try and negotiate that correctional services get out of the General Bargaining Council chamber. Because what happens there is that you arrive at a negotiation point that affects all public servants in ways that will affect different departments differently. And for us, this is how it affects us. Instead, to go into the security chamber, where collectively as security agencies, we budget jointly, we make our allocation, our submissions to Treasury jointly, And so it doesn't make sense why we are in a different chamber, because when we are there, we cannot foresee. In the manner we budget, we cannot foresee the consequences of the actions that comes from a different chamber. So what the minister has tried to do is to try and move us into a chamber that will align our budgeting processes with our plans. And so we are out of balance now. We are out of balance now if I was to come to you to answer a specific question. And we are going to be out of balance for a bit of time. It may be this year, it may include next year, unless the submission, the MTF submission is made to Treasury now, is approved, which will take care of both the issues of the 7-day and possible implications of the OSC. But you will agree with me that we'll start with a very heavy backlog. We're at 9%. We're going to start backwards and try and push forward from then going forward. Thanks.
Yes, you're allowed to participate. But I think we'll put time frame so that we can move on, because this one could keep us forever. I would want you to participate, but I did want to also ask members to take note of what you said, because some of these things we'll have to discuss offline and say, this is what the department is saying. How do we play without necessarily engaging them? But Minister, yes, please, if you could assist us.
Thank you very much, and my sincere apologies to the portfolio committee for arriving late. I know that I would have had to make the opening remarks. I'm still looking forward to that opportunity. But I don't know why the officials are beating about the bush on the matter. I thought I needed to say this, that one, indeed there is a moratorium in the department, which clearly was declared some time ago. My view is that it really has nothing to do with the OSD, right? They will tell you that they had to reprioritize, but it really has nothing to do with the OSD, because if you look at the OSD, it is only now, from the 1st of July, that we are implementing the OSD, even though there is a Resolution 1 of 2007, which should have been implemented in 2008 July, right? That's number one. What we've picked up has been happening is that the overtime payments have been consuming a chunk of the budget of the department. And that's what I think they should actually be saying. And we are hoping that by introducing the 7th-day establishment, which started also in July, that we will be making some savings. Truth of the matter is, the overtime payments have actually landed us in a situation where we are now operating on a deficit of $500 million. So it would seem to me that people declared a moratorium because they were trying to address a particular challenge which the department has had for quite some time. But one of the things, indeed, it is true that what Mr. Mutseki has said, that we are currently located in a wrong bargaining council. And we're trying to move, because the time decisions which are taken at that bargaining council have an impact, and a negative impact, on the Department of Correctional Services. So one of the things we're trying to do is to move from that bargaining council. But truth of the matter is, the declaration of the moratorium had nothing to do with the OSD, in my view, because the OSD is being implemented with effect from July. They used the money to pay for overtime. But what we've agreed now with the department is that, one, we must fill up filling the vacancies of the senior manager with immediate effect. There's a process right now of shortlisting to make sure that we have a CFO, make sure that we have a senior manager, KZN, central services, and all of those vacancies which are there. And then from there, for instance, the directorate which is not staffed completely, right? Director security. If you look at those, you have a deputy director vetting, deputy director of infrastructure, information minister, and all. It's completely not filled. There's also this problem of structural realignment in the department. There's a new organizational structure which the department has been working on since 2003, and and we are now in the process of completing that. I'm hoping to sign some elements of that structure so we can then start filling in the vacancies. So it would seem, amongst other things, people had to have this moratorium because they were also addressing to some of the structural challenges, organizational challenges which we had in the department. So the long and short of it, Chair, is that we're hoping that it will reduce the high percentage of vacancy rate, but truth of the matter is the money which was allocated for compensation has been used to pay off the overtime bill. I mean, that's the truth of the matter, and I think we should just state the matter to you so that we all hope that the fact that we've now introduced the 7 days and that people will not be paid overtime is actually what is going to save the department. It may be the benefits may be long term, but we think that in the immediate there are certain things that quick wins that we'll be able to achieve because we are enforcing the 7 day establishment, and indeed it is working in most of the areas. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. No, I think the Minister has helped a great deal with that input because it also answers the question on the implementation of the OSD and the implementation of 7 day, whether it's only done in Joburg or here or nationally. Yes, it is now being implemented nationally from 1st July, so it is running right across the country. And really hoping to have those gains that were created, that were taken away by the signing of Resolution 1 of 2007 that forced the department to continue with the payment of overtime, and hence the moratorium, as the Minister explained. So I think that is covered. And now we're running short for funds, as the Acting CFO and the Minister stated, regarding the implementation of the OSD, but the implementation processes are running within the department. In response to the other questions, the question on the labor relations monitoring, yes, there are challenges in some of the regions. What the department has done so far is that we've established a national monitoring committee, which is composed of management representatives as well as labor representatives, to look at how the RBO, the relationship by objectives, is happening within the various regions, and monitor that and provide support to top management, so that when the minister meets in the Ministerial Labor Forum, which is a structure that was created there, that the issues that of things that are challenges in the various areas will be able to surface and be addressed with the regional commissioners who also participate in those structures. The quiet figures would get all the figures and would submit them at a later stage. I don't have them. That is the injury on duty, the claims on injury on duty. Our involvement in the African, it's not the first approach. In fact, our approach is not that we prioritize them first, but I think in terms of the relations that government is building with Africa as well as the other countries elsewhere, it's a contribution that HR is making. Because of the facilities that we have and the capacity that we have where other countries don't have, around wellness issues is mainly participation in sporting activities across countries, building those relationships. And then around issues of training, where we've got capacity to provide the training, how do we do that? Either they deploy their people to South Africa where we've got training. But I think all these are initiatives that are being discussed between all amongst all the relevant countries. It's not that we're just forcing ourselves to go in there, but it's in relation with the directives of government in building relations with other nations and other countries. So that's the extent to which we participate from the HR side. And we want to also accept the reason we raise the issues, and we've got this strategy to deal with the issues of management of leave. It's precisely because of the challenges that we see here. Hence, we are saying as a collective, we put the strategy in place, and we are engaging labor to make amends to whatever agreements that were signed with labor before that led to extended time available to people to do other things. So we indeed looking into that. But any contributions would be welcome. But it is a situation that is unacceptable to the department as well. Hence, we have raised it and we are focusing on it. Then there was the issue raised on the matter of suspension. Yes, we are continuously trying to improve in terms of dealing with the issue of long periods of people being on suspensions. But I think the challenge is sometimes the nature of the transactions that are being investigated that would also need maybe some external investigators to be put in and so on. But I think the strategies and the activities we put in place is to make sure that from the national office we monitor that the regions actually deal speedily with cases that they are disciplinary cases that they are handling. Last year we assisted from HR side, we trained investigators, over 500 investigators, so that cases, because suspensions are delayed by investigations. But the trend that we've now seen lately is the suspensions that take long come as a result where a person has lodged an appeal. The people get dismissed and they lodge an appeal. And policy states that then those need to remain on paid suspension until that appeal is finalized. So that is where we see some of the cases taking longer. But precautionary ones, with the investigative capacity, we're trying to accelerate that. And managers in regions are seen, in particular, putting that as an agenda item to manage that. And on monthly basis, they are submitting their statistics to the national office. Indeed, the challenge is that in the region, they are doing this manually because they have to collect all the documentation. IT is working on an IT system that can assist us to monitor that process. That's where the delays come in terms of capacity. I think we've responded to the issues. The issues of the risks that were there that are still a challenge. We've got a risk management committee that is sitting now looking at mitigating, making sure that moving forward, how are we going to be dealing with this risk, which is shared by the CDC, OMS. So we have put that deliberate action in place to make sure that this is monitored on a monthly basis. They're not only reporting as a risk management committee, which now has been extended to have enough time to thoroughly interrogate the reports that people are taking to mitigate the risks. They are meeting over a period of 2 days because the regions also bring in the risks that have been identified that are related to them.
Thank you. Thank you. Minister, at this point, maybe we'll ask you. There was going to be central services and finance under administration, but I think we'll suspend those two because hopefully your input will answer some of the concerns and questions that we have and to take us forward. Just to indicate, Minister, that when we started, we asked everybody to introduce themselves and their area of responsibility, and indeed that's what happened. But one area that I didn't hear was who is the head of the department. Hopefully in your input you will explain who is or why are they here or not here, or what, because nobody said that in the introduction, and hopefully you'll address that for us. And also, Minister, out of this input, if at all possible, so that you can help us, the department or your own view around the various acting positions, because you'll be addressing it, I would assume, now with the head of the department, but also we have an acting CEO, an acting this, and an acting that, at the very top level. If maybe in your input you can just give us some indication as to how you deem resolving it, because for us I think it's going to be a major problem having acting people for a long time. Thanks, Minister.
Once more, my sincere apologies, Chairperson, and the committee, that I could not be here when you started at 9 o'clock. But I did ask Ms. Mseki to send my apologies. I really had a situation which was completely unlike me, but it's okay. Thanks, Chair. And the first thing I need to explain to the Portfolio Committee is the fact that, yes, we have an acting national commissioner, and I need to explain her absence here today. It is not that we do not take the work of the portfolio committee seriously, Chair, but there has been a standing meeting of foresight for JCBS DJs. So they are meeting this morning. And when she looked at the agenda, she found that, in fact, one of the key areas they are going to be focusing on is that of the awaiting trial detainees. So she then decided, and she did come and engage with me, the chairperson, to say that, well, we can't not have a person representing us. And at this stage, she's the only one who could have done that. And we thought that the portfolio committee would really appreciate that. And we also made sure that each one of the people responsible for the branches should actually be present at this meeting so that they can respond to, make their presentation and respond to whatever questions which will arise from the portfolio committee. But also to indicate to the members of the portfolio committee, because I never had an opportunity to do that, that following the reports about the national commissioner and the her occupation of some house at Woodhill, am I right, estate, we then decided to suspend the national commissioner. And perhaps I need to give a background to this matter. The department received these questions on a Wednesday before the story broke out on Sunday. Between the head of the of communications and the national commissioner, there was a lot of communication. And I was only informed in the morning on Friday when I received a response to the questions which were being raised by the media. And I had a problem with the response and the manner in which it was crafted, because it sought to justify the matter. And I also felt that the matter had not been reported to me at all. Because one of the things I've done is to request the department to inform me about all decisions and all decisions which were taken so that I can then look into those matters. I then wrote a letter to the National Commissioner that afternoon to request her to provide me with information. Came Saturday, there was no response, until Sunday the story broke out. At that point, I had already made up my mind that I needed to move quick, because clearly if there was no response, it means there were no answers to give to me. So on Monday morning, I called in a top management meeting, which included the regions as well, just to check quickly what the state of affairs is with regard to accommodation for the commissioners. That's a different matter, which I'm requesting HR to audit so that we can make a presentation to the portfolio committee at some point. But at that point, when I received the response from the national commissioner at about 10 that morning, on Monday morning, and he really said nothing, absolutely nothing. At that point, I decided that I needed to investigate the matter. So I suspended the national commissioner. I informed DPSA prior to that to say that this is the route I'm going to take, so that I'm actually suspending her in consultation with the minister of DPSA. Indeed, the minister set up a team, a task team from the Department of DPSA. We drafted the terms of reference, and that report has since come out, Chair. I received the report on Friday. I am studying the report. I am discussing the report with the Minister of DPSA, but also the way forward on the matter. Safe to say, Chair, the report does not look good for the National Commissioner, right? But that matter is under discussion. I will come back once we have agreed on the way forward with regards to this matter, come back and brief the portfolio committee in full about firstly the findings of the report and the recommendations of the trustee. But I do want to say categorically that the report does not favor at all the national commissioner. So that's what we've been dealing with since Friday, and yesterday we're dealing with the same matter. The second matter, Chair, which I would like to deal with is this operations on a deficit of plus minus half a billion. I'm raising it, Chair, because it clearly has serious problems for the department. Much as there are areas where probably as a department we've been reckless in the manner in which we've handled those. But the truth of the matter is, to start on a deficit of 500 million has created very serious problems for us. A number of areas in the department are going to suffer as a result of this deficit. To a point where we've made it very clear to the top management with the deputy minister that whatever the challenges, but this should not affect the budget allocated for the programs of corrections, of development and care, of corrections, of rehabilitation, and so on. So I don't know, in this process of reprioritization, I really don't know how we are going to fare. But the truth of the matter is, it's a very difficult situation. There are vacancies, for instance, Chair, which exist in the organizational structure, but which are not funded. So as we move forward to try and fill in those vacancies, you are told by the manager that, but Minister, you need to understand there is no money for that. So that is one of the critical challenges we are faced with. When we were implementing the OSD, when we started implementing the OSD in July, again, we had the big, big problem because National Treasury would not give money for this. So I'm sitting here. I don't know how HR and finance are working on the matter, but one thing which I was very clear about is that we now have reached an agreement, we've signed an agreement, and we don't want our staff to go on a strike ever again, and therefore we needed to deliver on our side on certain things, and that's what we have done. But that too has serious implications for us. The other area, Chair, which we need to touch on is the 7-day establishment. Under very difficult conditions, we've implemented the 7-day establishment. And what has come out very clearly from this process is that the Department of Correctional Services needs more warm bodies. In order for us to sustain the Seventh-day Establishment. We'll have to make sure that we come in and provide more personnel to the different centers. The Seventh-day Establishment Chair has necessitated us to introduce a shift system in the department. So we currently have a 12-hour times two shift system. It's working very well in some of the areas, but of course it has encountered some problems because of personnel in some of the areas. I also must state, Chair, that the agreement which we signed with the unions on the OSD has, in some areas, created a bit of a problem for us. Because we are saying the focus should not be on administration and the bloated structure at head office, but that there are some people we need to move who are doing administration to go and do the work of collection at the center. And of course, in order for us to attract people to doing that work, understanding fully that they will not be getting an overtime allowance. Everybody now seems to be wanting to go to the center because in terms of the salary scale, there will be a slightly more given to people who are doing the work of corrections at the center. So that is creating a problem because as we are moving around in the provinces, we are told that a number of people who are doing critical work at the level of the administration are now wanting to be relieved to go and do the work at the center. And that is incorrect. That's incorrect. Because you can't take, for instance, a person who is located within finance in the region or within HR who has that speciality, move that person to go and do the work of corrections at the centers because of a slightly better package at the centers. So there's a situation which is very tricky, which we are trying to manage right now. Chairperson, I want to say something about our internal audit capacity. Way below what is expected of an internal audit committee. It's an area which myself and the National Commissioner are currently looking into to see if we cannot beef up the capacity of the internal audit. But also we found that there have been vacancies in the audit committee, the external audit committee. And we are currently looking into that matter. I found that there was a shortlisting process which people had undertaken. But what I found interesting, though, which is a matter I've requested the National Commissioner to consult finance about, is that the shortlisting for the external auditors was done by the internal audit committee. I had a problem with that, but I've requested that we actually check from the accountant general whether this is the position. Because I have a problem with an external audit committee that is going to be recommended to us to appoint by the internal audit, because these are the people that they are supposed to have oversight. So it's another area which currently we are grappling with the acting national commission. Chair, we are also looking at the process currently of shortlisting for the senior management post vacancies which currently exist. We have an acting commissioner in KZN. We intend to appoint very soon. Maybe by the time we appear before the portfolio committee next time, we shall have filled in this vacancy. Precisely because the adverts were out sometime last year, am I right? And the closing date was at the beginning of this year. So we're looking into that matter. But that is not the only senior management post. We also have a vacancy in DDG, DCDC. I'm still not very familiar with the term. What is supposed to be DDG anyway? CDC. Central Services is also vacant. We are also in the process of shortlisting for that. Then, of course, we have this critical post of the Chief Financial Officer, the CFO. Currently, Mr. Mutseki is acting. The lady who was acting there, who is Ms. Marega, was also suspended together with the national commissioner because of her inability to provide answers to the questions I raised on this matter. And, but of course, then she'll be back at work because in terms of the report, a recommendation has been made that there is no finding and that she should go back. But nonetheless, we are now preparing to get a person to come in as CFO. But I also want to say that it's a very difficult area to staff. Very difficult because I've been consulting with Finance, National Treasury. I'm consulting with the Accountant General. I'm trying to find a really good CFO. And the challenge out there in the private sector, there are people who want to come and work with us, with government departments. But it's a challenge to get a CFO who does not understand the PMFA, who still has to be taken through all the government processes and understand the PMFA before they can actually get down to it. But we are nonetheless consulting with National Treasury so that we are not solely dependent on the plus minus 20 or 30 applicants who are currently being processed by the department. We want National Treasury to assist us to attract the best CFO because of the challenges we've had in the past. We are looking at the area of the awaiting trial detainees, Chair. Chairperson, we were directed by the review process last year to set up a branch for awaiting trial detainees. A lot of work has been done with respect to that by corrections. But what we've decided with the ministers of JCPS, I think I did indicate this just during the budget vote, that we'll be setting up a task team. Currently, we're setting up a task team to deal with this specific issue. A lot of work has been done, a structure has been developed, but I still feel that the entire JCPS cluster should actually take responsibility for the ATDs. It should not be the sole responsibility of corrections to deal with that. Because these, in the first instance, are not people who should be in our custody. So we're setting up a task team. Task team will be operational with effect from Monday, consisting of people from justice, state security, the police, and corrections. And that team will be headed by the DDG. The one other matter, Chair, which perhaps I should... But, Chair, let me say that there are quick wins with regards to the ATT. But we also realize that there are limitations for us as corrections. Much as we are in the cold face of the challenge of the huge numbers of awaiting trial detainees, but the biggest challenge lies with the Department of Justice. Because if you look at some of the people who are at the centers who are awaiting trial detainees who are on remand, are young people. Yes, some of them have committed very serious crimes, but you equally have people who are sitting at our centers for shoplifting, for drug abuse, not for distribution, but for drug abuse, who I really believe that if one had a way, would actually release, as long as we have their physical addresses, so that they can await their processes away from the center. But also there's another area which worries me, which I've raised with the National Commissioner, acting National Commissioner, that the awaiting trial detainees, Chair, as you know, are not in uniform because they are awaiting trial detainees. And so is the high rate of escape of the awaiting trial detainees. Because you take this person to court, this person is not in uniform, he's dressed in civilian clothes, it's easy to get lost in the process. So one of the things which I thought we could do is to look at what we can find and look at possibilities of putting awaiting trial detainees in uniform. Not necessarily the orange uniform, which is worn by convicted by the demon, but something that will, in the first instance, differentiate, separate them from them, but also something that actually will assist us as we move around at the center to identify who is an awaiting trial detainee and who is not. It's a big challenge, something which we all need to look into. Again, as awaiting trial detainees, Chair, we have 15-16-year-olds. Doesn't make sense to me. It really doesn't make sense. So these are some of the things which are, in my view, are highly contentious, which we are engaging about as a JCPS cluster. Whether you want to keep a 16-17-year-old in that kind of facility, right, who is on remand in any event, and some of them for heinous crimes, but some of them really for crimes which are petty and which they could actually be under correctional supervision officers outside our center. The matter of overcrowding here is a big challenge. It's a big challenge because it starts in the first instance with the awaiting trial detainees. But a lot of work has been done with regards to that, to awaiting trial detainees. But here, correctional services is a revolving door. As you release people today, trucks and trucks arrive at our centers at the end of the day on a daily basis to deliver more awaiting trial detainees. So it's creating a big difference. So at times, you may be given a figure today of 57. When I arrived in the department, we were told that we have plus minus 57,000 awaiting trial detainees. It could be that today we stand at that figure, or we have even more, or even less. But it's not necessarily the same people who were there in May when we took office. But we also have people who are on remand for periods of up to 2, 3, 4 years at our facilities. We have not been granted bail. It's a big problem for us. So the matter of the bail protocol will help to a certain extent. But you also have those who don't have bail at all, so who you will not be able to release so that they can await their trial in our communities rather than being at our centers. Chairperson, there's a lot of policy review work which must be done. It starts with the PPP, and I must say that, Chair, because I think some people have sought to misinterpret what you're saying about the PPP. Chairperson, currently we have 2 PPP centers, Mangaung and Kotane Center, Kotama Center. Now, Chair, if you look at the nature of the contract signed between ourselves and people who are running those centers, creating a problem. Can't have a contract for 25 years to run a correctional facility. So when I talk about policy review, for me, it's about reviewing of the policy with regards to the building, maintenance, and running of correctional programs at the center. It could be indeed that we want to go the route, keep the route of having PPPs with regards to the buildings and so on. But whether you want your programs of corrections to be done by the private sector is another question. But also the length of the contract. For me, it worries me. 25 years is a long time. So we have 5 outstanding PPP facilities, but I've instructed, and maybe this will make people rather uncomfortable because there's need for more facilities. But we can't start building those 5 facilities before the review of policy has been completely done and discussed with yourself as the portfolio committee and discussed by cabinet as well. So whereas there is a problem of space right now, bed space, and that we need more centers, but I think we should really be given a chance to review the policy on PPP. It could be that we'll keep the current, but whether you want this length of time of 25 years for your contract is another story. So when we have presented, we put together a document, that document will come to the portfolio committee for engagement so that we agree, all of us, on the way forward. Now, one of the areas, Chair, as well, which I want a review on, which again you will have to discuss as the portfolio committee, is the whole matter of mothers with babies in prison. Yes, I know that a number of them have committed very serious crimes. But my worry is the amount of money which is also spent on the babies who are in prison, which could actually be used for something else. So we need to look at what is best practice in other countries in dealing with this matter. It could be that one of the things that you'd want to do is to make sure that in future, those who are about, you simply delay their incarceration, not that you will, judges should not, or magistrates should not impose custodial sentences. They should. But you delay until a person is delivered to judge, and then the person comes into our center, not with a pregnancy, not with a baby. Because, Chair, when you look at the conditions under which those children, those babies live, it is such that I wouldn't be surprised if we conducted a study of who are at our center, the 17-year-olds and the 16-year-olds, if you find that some of them are children who were actually born in that kind of environment. So there are certain things which I believe we can do. It will also assist us to deal with issues of overcrowding. But it's a matter which obviously can't be finalized by ourselves, which we will have to bring to you. Chairperson, the matter of Kimberley has been raised. We're hoping that by September we'll be able to open the Kimberley facility. And I know that it should have been done in March, and then it was moved to June. Now we are at September. I really hope it will be September. Because one of the anomalies you'll find is that we have posts which have been filled in, which in fact are warm bodies which should be running the Kimberley Correctional Center. It's an anomaly. It's a very strange one to me. But nonetheless, the truth of the matter is, we have a huge number of people who are in our system, were employed on the basis of the opening of the Kimberley facility, and therefore would have been running that Kimberley facility. But they are not there, because the facility is not running. They are elsewhere. Now, the other area that's going to be very challenging is that we announced during the budget vote that you would employ, create jobs for plus minus 2,200. We want to do it, Chair, and we're forced by circumstances to do it because of the need for more personnel at the center. And we are told that there is no money to fund the 2.2. So we've also announced that creation of jobs, decent jobs, remains a key priority. We need these people to come in at our facilities. But the challenges of operating with a deficit of 500 million rand have now put things on hold for us in DCS. So we currently have filled in 500. There are people who are being trained at our Kroonstad facility to come in and man the control room. But actually we have an outstanding 1,700, and there is no money to employ those people. So there are good intentions, there's goodwill, there's political will, there's will from the managers as well, but the challenge again is funding for those vacancies. Chair, lastly, I do need to say that DCS certainly is an organization that needs a serious turnaround. Obviously, based on the serious failures of, one, the budgeting, our inability to anticipate, and our inability to budget for the needs and the priorities of the department. And the second area is our serious failure to implement decisions. Correctional services have very good decisions. One of the reasons why now we are implementing on the OSD on the 1st of July is because of our own inability to implement decisions. If we had implemented it in 2008, the 1st of July, we wouldn't have had some of the challenges which we had in the past few months. The other challenge is the turnaround time, basically, generally, in all areas. Turnaround times are very long, takes time for people to move, but I guess with all of us doing our work, together with the portfolio committee, and the kinds of questions which were raised, have been raised this morning, for instance, around vacancies and so on, people will appreciate the seriousness with which they need to move when they implement some of these decisions. There's another challenge of generally lack of policy refinement and implementation. So that's an area which we're going to have to deal with. So we are currently looking at filling critical vacancies. We also are looking at speeding up the processes, the DC processes, so that we don't have too many suspensions in the department and long suspensions at that. My very last share, there is a high rate of alcoholism amongst DCS members. And without justifying that, I don't drink. But having looked at the environment and the conditions under which they work, to a certain extent, I can appreciate why some of them have become alcoholics. The challenge is to do something not only about the inmates, but to do something about the staff of DCS. Our wellness program seriously needs to kick in, not only for inmates, but also for the staff of DCS. The high levels of indebtedness as well by officials certainly will compromise our systems and obviously allow for more corruption in the department. So those are some of the critical areas we are engaging with the staff about, with the managers, so that we can begin to tackle those issues. Chair, the last matter, I'll say this because I know that it will be in the media and you'll be uncomfortable when you read about it without me having reported about it. Inmate Mate is currently at Kalafong Hospital. He is undergoing an operation this morning and hopefully by the afternoon he should be back at the facility. I was rather shaken a bit when I received the report from Mr. Mutseki, just to check whether all measures are in place to make sure that he does not escape. And I've been assured that all security measures are in place and that by the afternoon after the op, this man will be back at the Kwaska facility. I'm raising the check because the media may pick it up. And when they pick it up, they'll report about it. And I know the portfolio committee will be uncomfortable that they read about it from the media without us having reported this matter. There are many other matters, Chair, which are not for the workshop, which we are keen to come and brief the portfolio about, the portfolio committee, which certainly are not matters which can be exhausted at the workshop. But I do want to say, Chair, that our HR does have serious challenges. We need to move beyond strategies to creating actual systems in the department. And I think when you engage with HR, corporate services, and then with HR specifically, you'll find that the biggest challenge is systems. And therefore, if you don't have systems, obviously, you're going to fall short in your implementation. So we have those kinds of challenges. And Chair, I'll take questions and I will participate with, together with the management when there are questions for clarity. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Minister. I will afford an opportunity to members to raise questions, but I do think, and I'm appealing to members, that the very first issue raised by the Minister around the suspension of the DG, because Minister, you are indicating just that your report is ready and that you will come and present it once you've studied it. Can we put that one on hold and have our meeting as soon as possible? I've asked Cindy to check which dates are available for us to have that engagement with you after Friday, and we will raise it with the department, with the members of the committee sometime. But my suggestion is that if we put that one on hold and have a proper discussion before the report, before we are able to study it, that's my proposal. On everything else, I think it's open for us to discuss. Mr. Salpa, I will come to you in a minute. But that's my proposal, that we give that one, as long as we get a report from the Minister ASAP.
Maybe I should have said, the reason why we don't want to present a report at this stage is that we've not as yet taken appropriate action, right? So it is better for us to come and present the report, which has findings, which has recommendations, and recommendations which have been implemented. So by the time we brief you, everything has been done to deal with that situation. It's no point to say, here's a report, there are findings, there are recommendations. The next question is going to be, so what have you done? And yet, in fact, we're in the process of dealing with that with the Minister of Education. Thank you very much.
That's fine, Minister. We will certainly find time. Mr. Chair, we'll still be able to raise 8 questions, but I'm just saying that if we can keep the meat of that for that discussion. But we will try and do it certainly in the next 10 days, as soon as the Minister and Minister Waloi have done their work. So we will open up for any questions. Again, my second one is that our program caters for the various programs, if you want to call it. So some of them that could fit into the program, let's shout for them, but I don't have a problem if you ask the Minister and repeat it again later on. All I want to say, Minister, is that, you know, it's becoming more clear to me now that we're going to have to move fast as a society, especially as a community. We're dealing with this thing of unnecessary costs of detention, because we are saying we can't fill vacancies because we don't have money, we can't do that because we don't have money, and yet we're spending money on a waiting child detainee that if we had done as you were suggesting, have them somewhere else, could be areas where we could at least save costs and pick up money. So I really do think, and I think certainly from our side, we're going to support the whatever moves there are to, it's not only just about reducing overcrowding, but the consequences of us doing that is that money can be used where we think is probably more important to use than there. So, yeah, I think we welcome that and we're wondering, or I am wondering, Minister, you spoke about the joint task team that is in place somewhere. Are we as Parliament going to have an opportunity to engage, enrich, contribute, or is it something that's just done between the justice cluster at the executive level? I do think many of us will be able to, even if it's a written submission, we do that and say, look, this is what we think that should happen. And where possible, that our considerations or our suggestions be considered by this task that's been headed by Museki. Having said that, I want to then allow for engagement with the interaction of the Minister or the input that the Minister has made. Anybody wants to contribute, Mr. Self, Mr. Fritz, you'll be the next one, and then Ms. Nguyen.
Thank you very much, Chair, and I thank the Minister for a refreshingly frank and non-defensive presentation on the challenges that face the department. I enjoyed listening to it, and I will also respect your suggestion not to involve myself in the first part of the Minister's report, except to say that when we do come and interrogate that report, the Minister will appreciate that the National Commissioner was not the only official living on Woodhill Golf Estate. And I hope the report deals with the other officials and that when she comes to report, that that report will cover that aspect as well. May I say that I think that some of the issues that the Minister has raised are very, very crucial to the sort of central functioning of this department. And I think she has got to the nub of it. But I share a certain frustration with the Minister based on a very long association with this committee. And that is that some of the things that have been reviewed and reviewed and reviewed and reviewed and, you know, somehow or another we never get to the stage of implementing. And I think the Minister is right to say that what's wrong with the department is systems and policies that don't get implemented. Now, I mean, I don't know, Mr. Fonseca, how many task teams there have been on awaiting trial detainees. I think that I can think of at least two that have preceded this particular one. And really one's got to, I think, get to a stage where one translates whatever the findings are into action. And somehow or another, I'm not sure whether the Minister shouldn't consider, you know, legislating on this matter. Because I know that there's a point of view that says that, you know, you shouldn't interfere with judicial independence and that decisions around bail must be the prerogative of magistrates and judges and so on. But actually, it's true. There are a lot of people who are awaiting trial shouldn't be there. And they're there because a magistrate decided to put that person as an awaiting trial detainee without bail. And I'm not sure whether one shouldn't decide, perhaps on a schedule of offences or a schedule of ages, or whatever the case might be, and convert that into an amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act to regulate who should not be detained as an awaiting trial detainee. Because I can't see any other way of moving beyond the talking to and educating and discussing stage to the stage where we actually start dealing with this thing as a concrete proposal. The same really, I'm afraid, applies to the PPPs. And I'm fully aware of the shortcomings of the current contracts, which I think were misguided when they were negotiated in 1997 or whenever it happened. But, you know, we've had, I don't know how many reviews of the PPPs and transactional advisors and goodness knows what else have been thrown at the PPPs. And somehow or another, we never get to the stage of, you know, laying some foundations for the new facility. So I'd really like to hear from the Minister when it is likely that this review is going to be finished, and more particularly, when we can start expecting a prison to be built. Final point is concerns the Minister's point about the appointment of personnel, and particularly senior personnel. If I understood her correctly, the advertisements for the Regional Commission of KwaZulu-Natal closed at the beginning of this year, if I understood them correctly. Is that correct? We're now in August. That's 8 months later. We still haven't made an appointment. Now, if this was the private sector or my organisation, you know, somebody's head would be on the line by now, because quite frankly, it doesn't take 8 months to make an appointment. It just requires people to sit down in a selection committee and do some interviews and make an appointment. So I'd really like to know what the holdup is, not only in that appointment, but in several of the other senior management appointments, which seem also to have been unnecessarily delayed. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Minister, I want to start by saying, by commending you. I think you absolutely took my advice, and I'm claiming credit for my budget, my speech at the budget, that you actually get the day-to-day running, and I think you're doing that. Wonderfully, and I get the same sense from the Deputy Minister. I think one of the issues that I, and with respect, you know, I raised the issue of absenteeism, and really, and I heard your point around some of the kind of dysfunctionalities, alcoholism on our terrains, on some of the prison correctional centres. But I really think if you want to target and just by 5 reduce absenteeism by 5%, one can do a savings of, I know there was a stat that I once saw that one can create 6,000 jobs if you create just a 5% reduction in absenteeism. And I think part of that, and the reason why I'm raising this very quickly, ma'am, is, you know, for instance, study leave in the department, people get 5 days for one subject, whereas the public service, everyone gets 1 day for one subject when you get a day and a day to write exams. I'm just making those kind of, now I know these are labor relations issues and so on, but I think one must start really reviewing a lot of the issues that you are suggesting in a number of the other things. And I really think that one must start with absenteeism and really get it right, because I think there's a culture. You know, the day after our diesel space of now recently, there were at houses from 30 people absent on a Saturday. 30 members were absent. They couldn't run the prison orders in the medium alone. I'm just making that point. We have a culture of absenteeism, and I think one must turn that around. That's the one thing. The other thing, I like your passion around children. I think the Child Justice Act is now really it's going to be in operation on the 1st of April. And I wonder sometimes whether our Department of Social Development is ready for them, and whether we are ready. And I think those are some of the issues that I know you're passionate about, the children, getting them out, keeping them out of prison. And I hope tomorrow, Mr. Chair, we will be visiting the youth centre also at Paulsville when we do the site visit at Paulsville. The third thing is the interesting comment around uniforms for waiting trials, because I think that is always the big issue, I think, in correctional centres. Who is, you know, is the priest who goes in, is here, wears the civilian clothes, or is it who? And this is an interesting point of easily identifiable people, without abusing anyone's rights, because there are people who come into prisons with no clothes, and there's nothing they might be. Or also reduce gangsters taking off your Nikes. It would be very interesting. So I think we're looking forward to some of those engagements, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Madam Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to say to the Minister, Governor Makosikazi and Bongwe, Chairperson, this is what we want as the Portfolio Committee, to get information, to be empowered with the Department of Correctional Service, seeing that we, as members of Portfolio Committee, we can do our work effectively. I'd like to thank him about that. I would like to say, keep it up, Minister, the Deputy Minister. Chairperson, I think we agree, all of us, to say some of the things we need to discuss as part of the committee and take decision. For example, Chairperson, in terms of waiting time, that doesn't belong to our department. I think we don't have to have a doubt on that when comes time to take decision on that. If they don't belong to our department, why must we be busy talking about it for the whole 15 years? Why can't we take decision as this portfolio committee? What must we do about our waiting time if they don't belong to us? Therefore, they must go where they belong to, not in our centers. We cannot expect to preach every time about something that doesn't belong to us. Chairperson, another problem is the problem of mothers with babies in prison. I think that, Chairperson, also we need to discuss further about it. because, but my problem is that I'm worried because we don't have budget minister to take us out to other countries to learn more about the solution of mothers in prison, because we don't have the budget in this committee. I think Chairperson maybe is for 5 years or I don't know. And even before, we never get a chance to go out to learn more about changing some of the things in the correctional centers. I'm happy about the Minister Chair when she talked about implementation of our resolutions, that some of the things that the department have is good, but there's a lack of implementation. I hope if some of the things can be implemented, we can do more. In terms of the Gotama Center, which has a 25 years contract, I think that one also we need to review it. And I think even last Mr. Sal, you still remember, as a portfolio committee, we were fighting for that 25 years is too much. I even said, maybe next time I won't come back. Those who are going to come in, they're going to be in problem of this 25 years contract. About creating a job, I'm worried because we need to do it as in our manifesto, our president talking about it. But I'm worried if they are not funded, all these vacancies. And I believe that maybe we need to get a quick answer to say when is this vacant school going to be funded. On the high rate of alcoholism, discipline must be there. There's no, I mean, there's no negotiable. If people doesn't respect their work, just imagine if the members, if they're alcoholic and they're looking after the dangerous people, what is going to happen inside in the centers? Therefore, discipline must be there for those members who are drinking during working hours. About March, we thank you for that information. And I think also March is not our God, whereby the media can make her godfather Mate always talking about Mate as if Mate he's a better inmate than other inmate out of the inmate that we have. Chairperson, I think that's all that I have, but I want to emphasize on this thing of I want to support you in terms of the issue of the suspension of the commissioner because of the investigation and whatever that they have been raised right now. But in terms of the acting commissioner, I believe that he won't act long. But because of this shortage of funding, maybe the one that is going to be a challenge to the department, because really we are tired of people who are acting and acting and acting, and after the acting, then other person came in that work, then that thing caused a tension amongst the workers there. So I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mom Grania. Member Blythe, any comments from your side, any input? Don't accuse us of that's fine. That's good. All right, Minister and members, have comments, others, questions you could deal with, but whatever you want to deal with, any whichever fashion you want to deal with it.
I'd like Mr. Moseki to respond to the matter raised on reviews which have been conducted before. Not reviews, task teams which have been set up to deal with the matter of the ATT. And then I'll take it from there. I won't be long.
Thanks, Minister. I don't think that there might well have been a task team, which was the task team of the development committee. That task team will continue doing that work because there is an element of this which is an integrated element of how the JCPS cluster functions. There are reporting lines in there that feed information into a whole range of bodies, whether you talk about children, whether you talk about case flow, whether you talk about improvement of the court and so on. So those systems will continue to be there. And the essence of this thing, any one of those systems will be around primarily improvement of the management of the population of the awakened tribe. I think there is a difference between this specific task team in the sense that what the minister and the ministers in JCPS are saying is that we need to have the speed of resolving the cabinet mandate, which deals primarily with dealing with issues of policy, dealing with the issues of institutional arrangement, the question that has been raised, whether awaiting trial belongs to the Department of Correctional Services. So those things need to be dealt with. And so the concern is around that, the pace we've been working on this issue has been a bit slow, and acknowledging that it is as a result of absence of focus. And so we need to do this thing with speed. I think the minister has given this a period of less than 6 months to the end of this specific year. And so there is that level of, a heightened level of focus around the specific testing.
Very much, Chairperson. You know, Chair, there is nothing which is as frustrating as wanting to implement a decision and there are no funds. I'm saying this because there are several directives which is issued. And unfortunately, officials are experts in giving you reasons why you cannot, a certain decision cannot be implemented rather than how we should implement the decision. And now, you see, because we're starting at a deficit of $500 million, it's very easy, it's a very good reason to say we can't move in this direction because of the challenge of. So even as you just supported the idea, for instance, of putting people in uniform, I know that maybe human rights groups are going to be raising issues, but we are one of the very few, if there are any at all, countries where you don't have uniform for awaiting trial detainees. As a result, if you visit them, I mean, the conditions under which they live are such, but are not conditions where they should be. I mean, if a person goes into the center in a T-shirt, a year ago, and a year later, the person is still in a T-shirt. So there's also, I hope that people, as people will be looking at the human rights issues, people will also understand and appreciate the current occurrences at our centers and the inhumane conditions under which these people are subjected to. So, and of course then, decision has been taken, directive issued by date X, and of course then the response which has come already, but it's going to be very difficult to implement this decision because there's no money. But in fact, these are some of the quick wins we could have in the environment of awaiting trial detainees by way of improving their condition. I don't think they would also object to it, whether it's a checklist, whatever it is. But we've got to find something. So that a person who's in a T-shirt in a center is not in a T-shirt for months on end. Otherwise, if no T-shirt, then the person is a disadvantage. I think the correctional services environment is an environment which requires, and I'm sure those of you have been in the portfolio committee long enough, you only appreciate the gravity of the situation in the first instance in our society when you are exposed to the correctional facilities and interact with those people, then you realize the extent of the challenge in our society. Because in the first instance, we shouldn't be having 16, 17-year-olds who are committing the kinds of crimes they are committing. So it actually changes your outlook to things, and it actually assists you to have a better understanding of our society. And I think that it's good that the portfolio committee is going to start with Paul tomorrow. I hear you're going to Paul tomorrow. And I would hope that as you go to Paul, you will not just interact with the correctional services officers and the inmates, but you will also visit the awaiting trial detainees section and get that exposure. Sometimes you wish there are decisions you feel you could easily take as a minister now to try and deal with the situation, but you can't, because we are at the tail end of the justice system. So if you take those kinds of decisions and say, for instance, release this 15-year-old with immediate effect, because you really, you can't keep this person for drug possession unless it was drug trafficking, because the child is abusing drugs, move this person immediately and take this person to a rehabilitation center. So it's clear to me that we're at the end of the justice, at the tail end of the justice system, and some of the decisions taken are very difficult for us to review. And therefore, for me, the suggestion by Mr. Self, or perhaps looking at possibilities of actually legislating, may actually be one way of dealing with the problem. I think that's the best road to go, so that all of us can commit ourselves to a piece of legislation which I have gone through and approved by Parliament. So one of the things that that task team will be required to do, for instance, a lot of work has been done with the council. I don't know if the portfolio committee in the past has had an opportunity of interacting with corrections, just to get a sense of the work that has already been done with regards to the ATD. But what is needed now is a small group of people to look at the work which has been done, together with the review that has been conducted, and say we need a piece of legislation, we need this type of organizational structure, and we need to implement by details, so that the matter is not a problem of corrections. Because I think that, not in so many ways, but I think that there is this challenge with everybody feels with it. In the first instance, this does not belong here. But anyway, we are landed with it. So if other government departments begin to take responsibility, I think that we will also be able to influence the judicial system to have an appreciation that there is no need for you to send a person who shoplifted to stay in prison for a year, because it's taking, consuming our resources, and it contributes to overcrowding. So once you have that task team, amongst others, I mean, right now the review process has come out with a big protocol, amongst other things. There's the issue of the actual people who are at the center, that the best space available. And I'm saying it can't be correctional services alone. Justice must come in so that they can appreciate the extent of the challenge they are creating for us by their inability at times to take decisions timeously and keep people at the center because somebody else is looking after them. So once we have that interdepartmental system, that the work of the interdepartmental system is not to start the process from the beginning, but it's still to bring together this work which has been done over years and quickly assist to draw up a program of implementation. And we set 6 months for those, it could be less than that. So as by next year, next financial year, we talk language of a grant that has been established and an implementation of a program for 80 days. PPPs have been reviewed before. Well, it could be that they've been reviewed. I don't know what the basis of the review would have been. But I think for me, I think I'm happy about this, because when I went into the decision, into the department, I just did not understand the rationale for PPPs in the first instance. So my attitude immediately was that PPP, building, maintenance, but work of corrections, rehabilitation, development, and debt, government takes responsibility. So I was purely informed by that. So it is in the course of interacting with the officials that in fact you realize that this is a correct decision I've taken that I should leave you, because of how in the first instance we've got to a point where we actually outsourced everything to the private sector. So you discover as you interact with officials that no man, in fact they too do not see the rationale and the sense in actually maintaining the status quo. And some of them don't even, the top managers don't even understand how we got to a point where everything was outsourced, including our programs of correction. Yeah? So it's a good decision we take. So I'm saying I don't know what the basis of the review in the past was, but I certainly know now that I have a good basis on which we should review. I'll cite an example, Chair. There was a strike at the two facilities, hunger strike, Mangaung and Kautama. I didn't know about the strike. I didn't know about the strike until in Kautama, it was the 14th day, I believe, by then. Right? The strike had ended in Mangaung. But when I interacted with the head of corrections as well, I found that his information was very scanty. Didn't have a full picture of what was happening because people are not accountable to the department. So you pay a lot of money for 25 years, but there is in fact no accountability. So we pay. That's all. We keep these people, we pay. But whatever else happens at the center, people probably feel they're not accountable to government. But they must be accountable, because these are our citizens, these are people who must go back to society, and therefore it is in our interest to understand and appreciate what is happening at the center. One of the inmates died last year. Everybody would have been up in arms about an inmate who has died from a hunger strike, but in fact you don't have the information. So we've got to find a way of also synergizing what is happening at our correctional facilities and what is happening at the privately run correctional facilities. I'm told that they were only on the strike because they want to move to our own facilities. Kimberly, I don't know, I didn't hear about that. But there are those challenges. So even if we've outsourced, private sector needs to understand that it has a responsibility to account. The last matter of absenteeism, you're right. Some people are sick the whole day, but come Friday and Sunday, they are back at work because they are not going to. They are going to get overtime money. So you sick the whole week, but come Saturday, you are very much alive and alert and well to be able to go and work over the weekend because there's overtime money which is coming your way. So it's some of those matters. That's why I'm saying we need to strengthen the capacity of HR to be able to manage those things. But I think that the interactions that we've been having with the region, of interacting directly with regional managers in the first instance, with area managers, commissioners, but also with center, heads of center, is going to assist us a great deal. But we don't talk through the top managers. Yeah? So that because I found that interaction very useful, because you get a lot of information from heads of center about what is happening at the center. I think that too is going to be a very useful tool for monitoring and evaluation. I think that's the last matter which was raised. Okay. The appointment of the, I don't know why there was a delay. Maybe it was because we're going to an election, because the closing date for the of the asset was in March, am I right? Can you remind me, Mr. Chisholm? Was in March. And by then, already people were moving towards a change of administration. Maybe that is the reason. But what is important now is that I've requested the acting national commissioner to set up a panel to shortlist so that by at least end of August, we've taken a decision about people who should be appointed in those areas. But of course, one of the biggest challenges we have is that of the acting regional commissioner, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest. who has been on a protracted, prolonged suspension. And that too has created a problem, because it means that for as long as that matter is not resolved, we are going to have a regional commissioner who is going to act. But since we also cannot reverse that until such time this SIU has completed its investigation. And maybe that's a matter I should have also raised, that we are expecting the report, the final report of the SIU, to be presented to us on the 17th of August. I think that's when they will prepare. I think they are appearing before the portfolio committee on the 19th. So we have requested that before they do that, at least we should receive a report so that we matter is finalized, sealed, and we take steps about forward movement. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure if people want a few minutes break or we continue lunches in another hour. Can we continue? Continue, that's fine. Can we then ask for the final two subsections of the administration program to be presented to us? And if we could ask that the input be as concise but as contentful as possible, because I think the value really is in the interaction more than the presentation from the department. So the finance section really, if it's not, it's fine. It's sort of changed, but if the finance part of it is not there, but central services is what we're going to look at now. Yes, sir. Thanks.
Chairperson and honourable members of the committee, the minister, deputy minister, and my colleagues. Chairperson, I think we need to just apologise for the fact that the report which we gave before was an attempt to consolidate all of them as one administration. But I think the kind of interaction that has taken place on the corporate services one and the interest you have expressed to get individual sub-programs presented, we've made arrangements for copies to be made of the branch report. I think I will go through very quickly on the preliminaries, because I think everybody else knows the objectives of the sub-program and key chief directorates that are part of that. And I will also not deal with the issues of structure, because I think, fortunately, other than the three senior management positions, all others are in fact having people. Very briefly, I will give an overview on the chief directorate legal and special operations, which I think is responsible primarily for ensuring that there's effective legal support services provided to the department's investigation of cases, prevention of fraud and all those related issues, as well as enforcing the disciplinary code. The risks that we are managing in that chief directorate relate to the issues of litigation. I will talk about these things a bit later. The issue of chairpersons not complying with disciplinary code and all those weaknesses that impact on us at later stages of disciplinary processes. Fraud prevention, challenges and corruption, as well as prevention of corruption in general. The role of the, just before reflecting on the next one, I think it's going to be very important to raise issues that we have prioritized for particularly the legal and special operations, is to ensure that we improve the systems internally, because a number of cases, they go through disciplinary processes are taken, decisions are taken, people are dismissed, and then when it goes for scrutiny or goes for arbitration, some of the cases are then reversed, which is a problem. So that's one of the reasons why in the previous, you will see, even in later reports on the annual report, that we trained over 500 investigators to strengthen our capacity to to effectively speed up the processes. At the same time, training of 175 chairpersons and initiators of the disciplinary processes. In terms of the Government Information Technology Office, key responsibilities is ensuring that we are implementing successfully the Master Information Systems Plan, which is a multi-year program, the support of the Department's infrastructure, IT infrastructure to meet the needs, and also support the implementation of actions relating to the integrated technology strategy, elements of which will be covered extensively by, because the what IT or GTO does is to create an enabling condition for core business to be done better. So I think a detailed reflection of the issues will be covered by core business, and also to optimize use of open source software. The risks we are facing there is the extent of the challenges we're facing with the power losses and the need for backup, the uninterrupted power supply system has got to be in place right across, and then the challenges we're facing in terms of the SITA network, and in a number of instances, more cracking into the system in terms of security, something which we are currently discussing with the company McAfee, I think so. And also the inadequate IT infrastructure. Very briefly, some of the projects which we are driving in terms of the Master Information Systems plan is remand detainee and offender management system, which I'm happy to say, Chairperson, that even this week there was a discussion at the IJS meeting, and other partners in the criminal justice cluster, like police, are going to ride on this program to ensure that we have a seamless sharing of information across the players in the criminal justice system. We also are working on this project of ensuring integrated corporate services system, but of course in that regard we still have challenges in terms of sourcing money, because the amount of money allocated to these programs overall has had to get cut of about 50 million in terms of the last financial year, and the implications kicking off into the subsequent years of the NTF. The other one is the cluster and parliamentary liaison management system. This is an area which the minister has raised very emphatically. In fact, we were written, or she read a letter, I think, to us about the turnaround times in terms of managing this thing, the tracking of the recommendations, what has happened, and all that, to make the point that this relationship between the department and parliament indeed is taken to a high level. The other one is the National Contact Center. The National Contact Center, phase one, has been completed. What we did last week, we even launched it internally. We have over 25 agents that have been employed. We are operating right now at the CETA head office in Centurion. For now, we're doing it, the National Contact Center, we're delivering those services for the benefit of civil servants within correctional services for now. And then at a later stage, we'll open it up to offenders, because what is happening, we're still facing challenges of ensuring that there's an effective management of information feeding to what has to be provided by center agents. So we want to close those gaps while we're testing it amongst our own civil servants. The other project which is critical is electronic document management system, and I think everybody understands the challenges we're facing in terms of a number of critical records that it's very difficult to access. So we need to migrate. For now, we've identified about two key sites that we're piloting in, and which include VetBank and the Office of the Minister. For the other unfortunate thing that happened a few weeks ago is that part of the records at VetBank experienced a problem of fire, which I think there's a process now of cleaning up and sorting out the problems. The other one is the ESELI project, which relates to integrated legal system. It's going to assist us a great deal in terms of having one database of providing accurate information that aligns everything else. The challenges, I've reflected on these challenges, and actually we're taking steps, we're making recommendations to leadership in terms of addressing some of these issues, including the prices, high prices,
Like, for example, you find that the open market is, in terms of those people that have tended to SITA, is delivering a service at a certain amount of money. But if we're getting it through SITA, then there's perhaps a top-up of about 7 to 9% of that. So we have made the recommendation to the local. In terms of the legislation, we can still go directly within those ones that are put into a pool of tendering companies. Inadequate budget allocations, I think we will be facing that for some time. I think I've covered the next. The other important area is the one that relates to what the minister has said, the issue of policy coordination and research. A lot of work has already been done in this regard in terms of auditing the policies that exist and finding gaps so that we can ensure that in the process we are closing those gaps while at the same time we remain at the cutting edge of the policy decisions that are emanating from the minister and the deputy minister. The other unit is the Directorate of Research. I will reflect on that later on. I think let me not deal with the substantive issues we are dealing with. The other one, Directorate Information Management and Directorate Information Management. Some of the key projects that we are running is the training of senior managers and managers on in policy development and implementation. I think it's been raised very emphatically by the minister that it's good to have the policies, but she has said you make good decisions, but the challenge we need to face is to close the gap at the level of implementation. And we have also prioritized centers of excellence managers as part of that training. The other one is policy development, and the prescripts are there, the framework is there, and we are giving regional reports, quarterly reports, to ensure that those people who are not moving in terms of finalizing the process up to implementation are actually reported to the management level to be held accountable. I think the others, let me just say, let me skip the others because I think they're self-explanatory. In terms of the information management, what we're working on is to ensure that the file system that has been approved by the National Archives Department of Arts and Culture is actually implemented. So that's what we're working on now. But of course, we've got to sort out a number of challenges. In the meeting we had last week, we were raising issues of the fact that we have a new file system. People should not stop using the old file system because the documents will not be traceable in the process. The other thing which we are at the final stage of is the records destruction register. I've talked about EDRMS, the program, and also the issue of data integrity is still a challenge which we're sorting out together with core business. We're continuing with the promotion of awareness of people of the management information system. The other key project is the resource center. And libraries that are being established in the regions. And then also in terms of research, we are working with the integrated justice system. We've established, in fact, we are leading an IJS research coordinating committee so that we can make it a point that a lot of research has been done either by ourselves or by people outside, which just needs to be lifted, those recommendations, and integrated into the policy development and the programs of the department. So a lot of work is taking place in that regard. Also, I think it's important, we have stated in our strategy plan that the issue which is raised very emphatically, the issue of reoffending rates, we are currently working to develop a framework which must be finalized by the end of this year. So over the next three years, we'll do the framework, have extensive consultation, have it adopted, develop a tool for effective monitoring of the reoffending rates. But of course, it's a complex matter because it's not just about that. It's about the definition of what it means reoffending from the start, arrest by detectives, up to the point that they land in our system. So we need to know at what stage is it most critical and the periods within which we're considering that is reoffending. All those questions that are unclear have got to be answered. But of course, an integral part of that, I think the core business, Mr. Nseko, will reflect on that, an integrated information management system, which is biometric, which is based on the biological identification of the people instead of myself coming in today as Manelisi Wole, next time I come back as Mr. Mutseki. The parole boards, we're doing the research, and other projects include organizational culture, data collection has started. We have service providers been appointed, so we're busy now with the knowledge, attitudes, and practices survey. The purpose is to ensure that where are we in terms of the issue that Mr. Fritz was raising very emphatically, the issue of morale of staff, and therefore what strategies we need to adopt to ensure a turnaround. The risks, I think we may be raising this issue consistently, the issue of budget challenges, lack of capacity within the department, managing partnerships in terms of research, business responsibility in terms of core business, lack of staff, challenges in terms of skills in information management, as well as policy gaps that need to be closed. The other critical section or chief directorate is intergovernmental relations, which is responsible for managing both multilateral, international, as well as bilateral relations between the department as well as our partners in Africa, and in SADC primarily in Africa as well as the rest of the world. Let me just move, because I think those areas are quite clear. Let me just move to deal with the projects that they are responsible for. Key projects. If you remember last year, over the past couple of years, we've been critical as correctional services in driving the establishment of an All-Africa Correction Association. That's going to make the point that the responsibilities of corrections are not left behind in the process of the reconstruction and development that is taking place. And last year, it was actually established ACSA in Zambia on the 26th of September, and that day was adopted as an African Corrections Prisons Day, Stroke Prisons Day, which will be having the first anniversary this year. So the challenge there is to ensure that the Secretariat is operating effectively, because South Africa was elected in that conference as Secretariat, and we do have challenges in that regard. The other one is effective participation in the SADC structures. The Minister has already participated in one of the meetings, and also the Deputy Minister. We already quite engaged with our partners, particularly within SADC. And there are very clear decisions that have been taken by the Minister that we've got to tighten up the process of managing these relations to make it a point that as SADC, as a bloc, we're sharing these views. We take them to a high level in terms of Africa and go up to the United Nations levels. We've got to make it a point that that arrangement is strengthened. The other one is the joint SA Corrections HRG and training program. Mr. Tetzane has reflected on that issue. The joint DCS UNISA Sudan Prisons Corporation, that program is going ahead, and as well as the joint DCS UNISA training of Zambians parole board officials. Other projects, I think we've covered those issues. I've covered also the cluster and parliamentary liaison management system. The risks, some of them is ensuring that there's effective management of that service within the department, because the Minister has raised those concerns very emphatically that we must actually sort out. Of course, I've mentioned some of these successes. We have played a critical role in the establishment of ACSA, which was launched last year. We established last year for the rest of Africa, MINCEC, Ministers Champions of Ministers Committee of ACSA Champions, I think so, MINCEC. We have succeeded to set up a subcommittee on corrections and prisons as part of the SADC's political and security structure. As I've mentioned earlier, the Sudan prison officials that are being trained in collaboration with the other institutions. We also had a trip of our officials going to UK and Denmark as part of the implementation of the 7-day establishment. We have improved our ability to develop appropriate programs to report on the government program of action. And I think we have tried to improve the response rate in terms of management of parliamentary questions and responses, but there are a number of gaps we still have to address. In terms of communications, I think let those elements in terms of describing what we're doing overall, I think they are quite clear. We have developed a communication strategy for the previous cycle. Right now we're busy after the new administration developing a new communication strategy that's going to cover a period of 5 years. We have facilitated the successful implementation of some of those elements, which include, among others, the corrections week, the mobilization of stakeholders, internally and externally. Other issues that we need to raise as perhaps reported successes, the manner in which we have handled the budget vote speech. Of course, the challenge we had this year is that we had in one day 6 budget vote speeches that were run, and the extent to which you can be able to overload media again was a bit of a challenge. Hence, in some instances, it's necessary to ensure that your voice goes through. You have your own means of reaching the target audience. And the challenge we are actually also addressing is improving internal communications in terms of reaching offenders as well as officials effectively. We have a multi-year media strategy that has been developed together with our plan for the image turnaround. We are in the process of currently finalizing the campaign of driving development and generation of good news, which is going to ensure that we are proactive instead of more reactive. A stakeholder strategy was adopted, and we implemented elements of that, including a series of roundtable discussions that we've had in the last financial year, and we're going to have a couple of them now, as the Minister has raised. We have developed, I think earlier this year, we have developed the EMC, extended EMC has adopted an image turnaround strategy, which is a 5-year plan looking at a number of critical areas that we need to focus on, including turning around the levels of ignorance of people of the core business and the responsibilities we have in the department. Because unless we have that dealt with, the levels of participation and understanding are never going to grow. I think the other details that are here, perhaps I would not deal with each and every one of them, because the issue of the image turnaround talks to the issues of changing the signage of the department. Because if you can go to a number of centers, almost 10 years after the change of the corporate ID of government, are still having the old logo and old signage. But what happens is that there's a lot of cost involved in that, because earlier, what we did an audit of all the signage in the department. It's quite a number of millions, a couple of millions that are required for us to turn around that. As a result, from the center, what we decided to do is to request management areas to begin to drive that based on the availability of resources. Some progress has been made in Johannesburg and in the Western Cape. About 8 of the all the centers of excellence signage was changed in the Western Cape. Northwest as well, there's significant progress. But what we've undertaken to do is to continuously do an audit of progress made in that regard. I think I've covered most of those issues. I think everybody knows the SA corrections, because we're also distributing to members of parliament as well as NDCCs right across the country. Currently, we're involved with development in Kenya, developing a comprehensive. We have a discussion paper already towards the CS TV and radio concept. Because remember, the network is already there, the facilities are there. So far, right now, we're utilizing them, but not as optimally as we should be. So that's what we're working on. We have promoted, we've played a critical role in terms of supporting the rest of core business as well as corporate services on issues of OSD 7 days, organizational culture. We have established a JTT, but the joint task team for driving the establishment of an overarching coordinating structure for all stakeholders in the country. And I think we still have to brief the minister on that, and the actual endorsement of that JTT will be done by the minister. I've talked about the image turnaround. I've talked about the campaigns which we have covered. Operation Vala, I think everybody is aware of that. It's continuing to move from strength to strength. But the challenge that we wish to note is that we've got one of the major pillars of our communication strategy around the budget vote speech, the other one, the Corrections Week campaign, Operation Vala during the year. Now, what is happening in terms of our media monitoring and also our public perception survey, we are seeing very clearly that in between those major campaigns, although we make improvements of up to 60% sometimes in terms of the net representation, but the problem is we're moving from a very low base as correctional services. And after the campaign itself, we again go generally down to very low levels. I've covered those issues. Challenges and risks, challenges of budget. What I'm happy about is that the minister, during the presentation of communications to the minister said it's very important to pay attention to this function because it's very important. The success of us lies on the people improving visitation to beyond 26% that is currently there, improving participation of everybody, et cetera. And we must therefore have a significant mechanism and strategies and resourcing of those strategies to improve this scenario. But of course, it's happening within the context of cost-cutting measures to make the point that we are dealing with those challenges ministers alluded to earlier. HR capacity, those issues have been discussed as well, and I'm sure in the process as an integral part of addressing the rest of other challenges, we will have communications also taken note. The other issue, which is also very critical, we need to reflect on is ensuring effective coordination of all these key apex leadership structures. And the minister, I'm happy that she has established a committee led by the chief of staff in her office to make it a point that OMS communications, National Commissioner's Office, are constantly liaising and integrating the work that is being done. Because by the mere engagement of the minister, wherever she goes, whatever she does, whatever she does not do, is in itself a communication effort. I think what we did, we gave just an overview of the budgets that are allocated to the different chief directorates, and then an indication of the expenditure thus far. I think, Chairperson, at that point, I'm almost done. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We'll open it up for comments, questions, whatever. Let me start this time. The first issue I wanted to raise was that in at least two of your slides, you highlighted as a risk lack of funds, possible risk. Now, the question that I'm asking, if you're giving us all these wonderful ideas, is it just a wish list that you'll come back to us in a year's time and say we wanted to do it, but we never had funds to do it? Because we'll certainly hold you to these things. And if it's a wish list, or if it's something that you say could be done if we have funds, it's better to say it now so that at least we understand that it's not doable because of lack of funds. Just a overall question. I think whilst I hear what you're saying about your communications, maybe we need to investigate whether our communications are reaching all our target markets. You know, if you went to Westbury, where I come from, it's known to be a gangster-infested area. And all they know about corrections is that's where you get locked up. Nothing more. And I was watching you on ETV the other day talking about the good things that are happening there on Deborah Pass's show. But that doesn't hit the ground, certainly not in the Johannesburg community. It doesn't. So I think we need to have another way of communicating, or we need to upgrade our communication, because the messages are there, the motivation is there. It doesn't hit the young people in El Rado Park, in Westbury, in Rivoli. I can tell you that. All they know about it is that it's a violence of the state. So, around your communication strategy. That's why I was asking you if you got money. And then, you know, your very first slide spoke about fraud and corruption prevention. Minister, I don't know if you are aware, but in your department, you know, there are, or the Public Service Commission was expecting 176 disclosures of interest. From your department, not one submitted. And this is supposed to be a vehicle that would help us with conflicts of interest and so on. Now, it's a national outcry when MPs don't do that. We know also that just 2 weeks ago in the Sunday Times, there was a whole hullabaloo about, and there's a whole debate at COPA whether management or officials should be involved in tenders that have business with government. So I do think that this must, there's no excuse for us not to do this. I think in terms of disclosures, you should just make a ruling that by this date your senior managers must disclose to you, because it's something that doesn't need to have a debate or anything. It's not there. And this report from Sangweni has been around for a while. And these are certainly the things that we would look at. And certainly when you appear before Scope on Friday, those things will probably rock up again. So let's not wait until the problem starts, but let us fix them up. It's just not excusable that we don't have disclosures for senior managers. I think that needs to be done. And then the final issue, maybe, Minister, that was what we missed out from the first presentation. It might not be your own one. But, you know, compliance or compliance to policy, I know you raised the issue about policy, Minister. Can somebody tell us what is, or somebody can just reiterate to me, maybe you did, how are we going about resolving that thing? I'm asking this question because in this department, there are always issues around the nutrition tenders that were given, all these tenders that were renewed without the necessary supply chain management procedures being followed. If somebody could just tell us, what is it that you are doing or plan to do in terms of fixing this thing up? To be blunt, some of us from where we're sitting think that there's actually no compliance in many of the things that you're doing. Now, we can speculate why there was no compliance, but somebody must just try and help us understand why this happened so many times. So those would be the three issues that I would raise, just whether this is a wish list. I think your communication could be better utilized towards a better target market. The disclosures, I don't even think it's a discussion, Minister. I think they must just disclose. All of us disclose. 176 of them haven't disclosed, according to Sangweni's report. And then your compliance with supply chain management, generally speaking. Any other inputs that members would want to raise around this presentation? Mr. Self, and then Mr. Fritz, you follow.
Mine is a very short question. I'm very close from your question around the campaign. I'd really like to know how much this image turnaround campaign is going to cost, if costs are going to be an issue. What is it that you're looking for to provide? And secondly, relating to an earlier question, an image relates to the brand that you're trying to promote. And if we're going to spend a lot of money on turning around the image of the department, then equally you've got to spend money on getting the basics right. So that if you are saying that we're doing wonderful things in the department, but nobody answers your telephone, or nobody replies to your letter, then that is the image that the public has of your operations. And no amount of extensive advertising is going to change the experience that people have of interacting with the department. So I want to know what attention is being given to getting the basics right as part of that campaign. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I want to know more about the parole board in terms of that. Is it all our centers nationally do have this parole board? And if we do have, I would like the presenter to tell us more about this parole board, because I believe that this parole board is the structure maybe can help us in terms of people that must get inmates that must get the parole in time, and the challenges that they are facing with the parole board. And in terms of the communication, I want to know that this communication strategy on the TV program and the radio, is it goes under the, what they call, the groups in the prison when they say this one is group one or group two, there's this grade that she used to give them, or this TV, is it watched by all inmates, and what is the programs that are on place in terms of changing their mindset, or this TV is just for them to sleep, eat and sleep and watch the TV 24 hours with our tax money. And in terms of Imbizo communication, I think that one we need to implement it, because I believe that is the one that is going to make even the community outside there to know more about our correctional center. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to just know the joint collaborations with the UNISA. DCS and UNISA in the Sudan, and I think in Zambia, around the training in Zambia, around the training of parole boards. What are the costs involved in that? That's the one question, and then the other question around, I think if I'm correct, it's a communication issue. Portraits in all our correctional centres. You know, whenever the government changes, you must change all the photos in the office of the prison. So you have a photo of a commissioner, photo of a portrait of a commissioner, the deputy, not the commissioner, the minister, the president, and the deputy minister. It's interesting just to know what it costs to have all the photos replaced. I'm not sure whether it happened. Don't get me wrong, it's not a personal thing. I think it's perhaps important. But it's just interesting when we cut costs to perhaps also cut at those kind of unnecessary expenditures. And in your roundtable discussions, I think it would be interesting to also invite some of our members on the portfolio committee to some of your roundtable, because I think the last one I went to, I remember, was around rape in South African prisons, which was very, very, very valuable. So it would be interesting for us or to all other members to be invited. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And before you respond, let me assist you. Mr. Sitz wasn't asking what is the cost of the portrait. I think he was saying, why don't you get rid of it? Because they are a cost driver. So that's how we engage it, because I think that's what it says. Why have these things? They are a cost driver. So if you have a response to that, respond to that rather than saying, I'm not sure how much it's going to cost. So if you could respond in that fashion, it will help us with the engagement. Thank you, sir. Whoever from the department, you can just find it.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks for the question. Just on the matter of financial disclosure, to be honest, official senior managers did comply with the requirement. They did submit financial disclosure. The challenge was at the level of the accounting officer in that. When they presented the disclosure to me, right, it was a useless and a futile exercise in that there hadn't been an analysis and an audit of the interests of senior managers vis-a-vis the company which we have in our department who are providing services to us. Okay? So it doesn't help me to get a file where Ms. Moodley declares that I have an interest or shares in the following company. But in fact, I have no analysis which assists me to link Ms. Moodley to the companies which exist in the department. So what would have happened in fact is that, right? I would have then submitted this thing to Public Service Commission without a comment that gives an indication whether I found that Ms. Moodley has interest in some of the companies or not. So when I received the pile of files, I then said, no, take this back. I'm not going to sign them until first time. At least I have a one-pager that says to me, the following are the companies which we have, which are working with us in the department, and the following members of the senior manager, right? We've determined that instead they have links to those companies, or that there's been consultation with CIPRO, and we find that there are conflict of interest issues. Now, when they give me a pile which says nothing, it does not help me to account to the Public Service Commission about the activities of the manager. So I then said, please provide me with information that's going to assist me to determine whether there are conflict of interest issues or not for submission to the Public Service. And that's where, and I think that it's a matter which probably the challenge not only to corrections, maybe to other ministers as well. You can't just receive a pile of disclosures and you submit to the Public Service Commission without indicating to the Public Service Commission whether in fact you've uncovered that, or there is something that indicates to you that indeed they are. Otherwise, it's a futile exercise. We may as well make the submissions which really say nothing. So that's why we then, so we disagreed. We did not forward this to the Public Service Commission because we needed some information. And unfortunately, the information has not come as yet. So I just wanted to say, Chair, indeed they did comply, but it said nothing. Does not assist us to deal with the matter that's being raised by the Auditor General. So I thought for the record, we needed to know that they complied, but of course when they were then sent to me, there were problematic areas. Because when you move into a department, you don't know what company is doing what, and you are listing all these things, people are listing 15 companies, but you have no clue whether in fact the companies listed in the disclosure are the same companies which are providing services in the department or not. So that's the reason why the submission was not made, and Public Service Commission should be aware of this, because they requested the acting accounting officer to then deal with the matters, and I know that it's supposed to be coming to me, back to me, so that's for submission. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. I just want to attend perhaps to two of the questions that have been raised. One relates to whether all correctional centers have got parole boards. I'll talk to the issues of parole boards later, but the answer immediately now is no. We've got 241, 39 correctional centers, we've got 52. Parole boards, and so not all of them have a parole board. But there is something, Chair, that you have raised about the image turnaround and compliance with the policies. And indeed, I think there's been quite a lot of work that has been done by our Departmental Investigation Unit, at a different level, at a different level to uncover areas where there could potentially be instances where our procurement processes have been compromised. And so that work has happened. But there has been a specific instance of specific set of contracts, which I suspect are the ones that you're talking about, that has attracted media attention. And I think in the one hand, the answer is that the minister just said that report, one set of report will be submitted on the 17th. And this report will have been submitted to the department, initially being issues that we ourselves had invited some of this organization. You'll remember that there has been an investigation conducted by the Auditor General, which was completed around practically the same set of contracts, and that investigation did not bring back anything to the department, and an investigation that was conducted by the Public Service Commission, that too. And so the only outstanding report now would be this one of the SIU. We have always said, Chair, that we need to always make distinctions between the motives of individual persons, which often cannot be found in the manner of interaction, and the systems and controls that are placed in those systems. And our experience really is that in application of the systems, I don't think we've been found wanting in many of the instances. It's when it comes to issues of individual interest where it has become often very difficult, because it has often been difficult to find out whether Motsoaledi is sitting in this meeting. Is he hiding something we should know? And if indeed he's hiding something we should know, in terms of our procedures, all we say is that he must write down here that he doesn't have an interest. Then we discover 6 months later that perhaps he had an interest or questionable behavior. And it is that element that has been a question, not necessarily our procedures. And there has not been an intention to clarify and set these two things apart. But we have said, evaluate our procedures and find out what we have done wrong. And nothing has been forthcoming back to us to say you have not. But indeed, when it comes to individuals, and I've always said that it's important to make distinctions between individuals and the procedures where have been floated by ourselves.
I think Mr. Motsoaledi should have mentioned that one of the biggest challenges we have are the resources to do the work for the public board. In most instances, there is non-compliance with the very parole board processes, in that you find there will be departments which are not represented on the parole board. That's number one. Number two, parole boards we've interacted with through this process of regional visits have come out very clearly about the challenges of resources. So that is an area that requires a lot of attention. But three, most of the parole boards are supposed to be highly mobile. It's rotational, the processes are rotational, they have to be moving all over, but there isn't even transport available for them to do that. But also, we also need to look at the contracts of the parole board members, those who are full-time in this job. So the parole boards currently have a problem, have a challenge, and we need to capacitate in order for them to be effective. So they are trying their best, but the resources are very limited.
Thank you very much, Chair. I also welcome the presentation, but there's just one thing I wanted to raise, is the slide on policy, coordination and research. I wish we had more time, because almost everything which has been discussed this morning, our success in making a breakthrough depends to a large extent on our ability to be able to make use of information that we gather from all our centers, with an aim of coming up with some sit, I don't know what is that English word, but very, very concrete, simplified policy directive. That will apply to what we're saying about awaiting trial detainees, the question of children, the question of women, the nature of offenses that we're dealing with. I'm not sure whether in the department we really have a strong policy unit which is helping us to move forward. We have said a lot about the need to cooperate with other departments within the cluster. But you see, just taking the awaiting trial detainee project, if you are not able to go to the other department with synthesized information in terms of saying police, this project will not move, you having not taken done one, two, three, the audit on our cases to how many people are in any of our centers on a daily basis. If there's no information to or system to get the same information from the magistrate, then it creates a vicious circle where we talk broadly all the time, but it's almost like frustrating everybody because they don't get a feel of what we do. So I'm raising this question of policy because it has been my experience and feeling that you almost get frustrated as to how we're stuck or we don't have an ability to take our processes forward. The criteria, you find that it's not clear, because policy will help you with all those and say, if you take out children, they should be in this range, and then social development, that's where you come in, or whatever ministry. So it's a very, very important aspect of our work. But I hope, as we work within this workshop and many others to come, we'll see how we strengthen that aspect of policy formulation, going with monitoring of our implementation. The other aspect, which I really think is the core of the module in front of us, communication. One of the members said something about, I think it was you, Chair, whom you said, if you communicate, whom are you talking to? It's certainly, I think, our... Well, maybe through the benefits of other members and the questions that are raised, we will go back and be able to do better in terms of targeted or strategic messages. There are specific things that worry people about correction. Security, it's just one of them that I'm saying, of information in terms of what is going on there, and also that people don't leave, and also the quality of life. Those who are human rights lovers, they don't want to hear that people are dying in our prison. They don't want to get stories that people are not well looked after. So it's a question of packaging information so that it's targeted towards achieving specific goals. At the moment, we seem to react a lot to what is going on. We still need to devise strategic communication in line with our core business and our outcomes, if we have or envisaged outcomes. That's another challenge for me, which we have next to policy, clear policy formulation. But also the question of budget management. I don't have the skills of interrogating the just budget. But of course, the question has been, are these projects on communication implementable or just a wish list? So that reminded me of a question of budget management. It's a major challenge in a big
departments like ours with the head office and numerous corporations. I think with a better ability to manage what we have, if we could be clearer even about our needs. Sometimes it's very difficult to separate our inability to manage the budget and the scarcity of resources, financial resources. I just wanted to flag those with the hope that as we continue with the workshop, we'll get clarity about some of these points. Thank you.
Chairperson, I think I'm one of the blessed ones because by the time I'm responding, the minister is here, the deputy minister, and other colleagues. They have dealt with a number of these questions quite comprehensively, Chairperson. I'll just reflect very briefly on the ones that have not been touched. One is the issue, the question about funds. Are these things doable? I think the department currently is involved in a program of cutting costs. The process that we're involved in first is starting by honoring contractual obligations. A number of the projects which I talked about, which are part of the MISP, are already contracts with service providers appointed. They are delivering on those issues. So those kind of responsibilities cannot be cut off. But in terms of the new ones going forward this year, going forward, some of those were invariably be affected. One of them is the idea in terms of our projections around the corrections contact center was to coordinate and do all these requirements and put in the necessary infrastructure, put in the necessary personnel to be able to do it for internal publics within a short space of time, also open it up to external publics. But the second phase for now is going to be put on hold because the budget is not available for taking it forward. Fortunately, that part is not part of the contractual obligation, but the one which is actually being implemented and rolled out is also already covered. The same applies to the EDRMS, the same applies to ARDOMS and other projects. In terms of the image turnaround, the reality is I think we all acknowledge that there are challenges in terms of communication. The audit that we have done, we commissioned an effective monitoring of the media and analysis of the media by an independent company that reflects on how we are making an impact. That report is available. It can be made available to anybody. It reflects the challenges that we're facing in that area. We have also joined hands with GCIS to ensure that we assess public perceptions of performance of correction services on a number of, I think there are four critical areas that have been identified. The feedback that is coming in some areas is good, in some areas it's very bad. For example, I think the level of confusion, I agree with each other, the level of confusion out there in terms of responsibilities of various players in the criminal justice system. You've got about 40-something people that are saying for sure correction services are responsible for incarcerating offenders. You have about 27 that are saying we are arresting people. That's police work. We've got about 17% in terms of the findings that are saying we're responsible for metering out sentences to people that have been arrested. And then you have about 9% that is confused. So you definitely need a massive public education campaign. Now the question is there money to run out that media campaign and whatever? We need to have a very effective balance between the Imbizo style, which the minister has raised very emphatic to say, for example, around the Nelson Mandela Day, the minister when we were discussing Nelson Mandela Day, rather than having a big function at the center, which may not register the necessary impact in outlying areas, we need to have a coordinated, decentralized strategy where area commissioners, various people are going out there to network with people and talk to people at that level. So I'm saying, therefore, we can reduce the costs, but with the suggestions that are coming from the mission, we can register a much greater impact. May I just raise one thing around the Corrections Week, for example, is that when there's lesser, okay, let me put it like this, to a large extent we are heavily centralized in terms of our communication strategy. in correctional services. We are moving to a scenario where we have strategy development at the center, the program development coordination at the center, but the implementation has got to be decentralized so that the register impact. If I can cite just the corrections week, after the escapes in Bangui and other places, we went down in terms of net representation to about -59% around that time, which was a crisis. During the corrections week, we turned around the capers to just -1, but still we have not broken the 0 point. We have not broken the 0 point. But I think it's important that I'm not defending congregations, but I'm saying on average, government is performing at an average of -15% in terms of the net representation of government in the media. But correctional services, we're doing worse than that in a number of instances. During the analysis, if you analyze the rest of the 12 months. So these are the challenges that we need to deal with. And the minister has raised it. They said, I welcome Corrections Week, I welcome the Operation Val. But what happens in between? I want the following campaigns raised. There are two campaigns, the strategy we're working on. One is promotion of visitation of offenders and interface with communities and families. Two is to ensure that we optimize, as the minister said in the speech, the involvement of offenders with communities in a way that is coordinated, which itself communicates to the public. I'm sure those campaigns will make a real difference. In terms of the pictures, the issue that has been raised, oh yes, around the image turnaround projections. In terms of the projections of the image turnaround, we've costed, if money was available, it would cost us about 30 million over 3 years. So with year one, having 8 point something million, year two, we're increasing with the inclusion of television to about 11, 12 million, and the year three, it's going back to less than 10 million. So that's what the strategy says. But what is important is that there are elements of the strategy which can be implemented without necessarily costing much. So we need to find those creative, innovative ways of going around the challenges we're facing financially, because the reality of the matter is core business is important to feed offenders and ensure that the basic development and care responsibilities are delivered rather than radio adverts. We understand that. And the TV, radio, the utilization of the monitors that are in our facilities, right now there is ad hoc use of those, which is imbalance, because in some areas we've got a number of partners that are working with us that are running a number of spiritual rehabilitation and a number of other programs. But other centers do not have the benefit of the well-established NGOs that have got the capacity to utilize the facilities. We have got contracts in different areas. In addition to that, we have developed capacity internally. Major events that we have and major programs we have, we're capturing them on video and doing them into short films that are distributed all over the country for them to be used on that now and again. Remember, if you have a graduation of offenders and you produce a video on that, I think offenders appreciate more to look at some of them coming from all over the country being part of a graduation ceremony in the Pretoria management area and what happened on that day. The messages from this. So that part of what is happening. But the challenge we're facing is it must be fairly equitably distributed throughout the country. And that's why we're discussing with development and care to ensure that those gaps are actually closed. And then the issue of portraits. I think the question we perhaps need to ask is, why is that being done? I remember, let me cite an example of the Mrs. Jabu as an acting national commissioner. She went to LMN the other day. Her experience, when she came back, she said, oh gosh, officials had no clue about who this person is, etc. You know, she was our acting national commissioner at that point. But our own officials in that deep rural center had no clue who this Jabu is. Now the question is, do you say go do away with that, or you need to find innovative ways of going around if the financial implications are such that we've got to cut costs? We need to find creative solutions to solve that problem. Because the issue is, will that service or that benefit be met? And I think we will have to apply our minds to that and find really creative ways of going around that issue. And the UNISA roundtable discussions, I think that matter is noted. It has to be done. normally we're done, we're doing it, and I'm not so sure why didn't we invite members of parliament at one point, because we normally invite. The program with UNISA, that program is run together with HRD, but what is happening is that actually the funding is also sponsored. The funding is also sponsored. In some instances, you have got United Nations structures that are coming in as part and parcel of driving the reforms of the prison systems, not only in South Africa, but in Southern Africa. So part of that is funded. So what, to a great extent, what we're responsible for is to provide exposure to people, deploy some officials to assist in that process of development. And the chairperson, unless I'm missing one other. Okay, I think I've dealt with all of them. Thank you,
Chairperson. I think so too. It's 5-1. Can I propose a slight adjustment to our program for after lunch, because things are terrible. I know that we still have to deal with finance. You'll indicate when you're ready. But can we agree that between, or we meet at 2 o'clock sharp to 3 o'clock, Ms. Moodley will deal with you and all your programs. I think you indicated you were going to do 4 and 5, I think. So we'll deal with care and development together, and then we'll engage in discussions around that. And then 3-4, we'll deal with your one, sir, and engagement. And then from 4 to 4:30, we'll deal with the legislative program and an open discussion on whatever else we think we want to discuss to tighten up. Minister, I think that's where maybe you and the Deputy Minister will be very useful to assist us. So we then from 4 to 4:30 plan to just wrap up everything and take it forward from there. We'll find a place for finance. We'll find a place for finance, because we thought that we were going to deal with the budget and the actual year-to-date and so on, but if we can't deal with it now, but at some point we will deal with it. I know we have a meeting, our quarterly review with yourself and the AG, at some point we're going to have that discussion, but if we can deal with it now. Minister, I'm not sure if you prepared anything, but certainly on the legislative program, the type of things that we're looking at, are there any amendments that you are envisaging bringing to Parliament, by when? Things like the current 2008 amendments, when are they going to become live? I mean, we have them here, but they've not been promulgated, is that the correct word? They've not been that type of thing. What is the whole stuff and so on? And then also the incorporation framework, as we understand it, needs to come to us. Once it's been cooked up somewhere, has not come to the committee. So it's those type of things that we'll be discussing. There might not necessarily be anything you need to prepare, but it'll be those type of engagements that we'll have between 2 and 3 and wrap up. My understanding is that we have organized a finger lunch and it should be outside. So please enjoy finger lunch, and if you could come back at 2 o'clock sharp and we'll continue with our workshop and hopefully be better informed later today, or by the end of the day. Thank you very much. We adjourn till 2.